It is 9 o'clock on Thursday, March 10th, 2011. I'm going to call this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order. Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving?
Present.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Here.
Commissioner Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Chairperson Christensen?
Here. If everybody will join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Public comment period on items not on the agenda. I don't see very many people, and I don't see any slips, so I'm going to assume there is no public comment on items not on the agenda. I do know that Mr. O'Grady, our commissioner from District 5, who was absent at our last meeting, had a few words he wanted to say, so I'll cede the floor to you, Mr.
Well, thank
O'Grady.
You, Commissioner Christensen. Many of you know that I was absent at the last hearing of the SunPower California solar ranch project, and because I was ill with pneumonia. What the public doesn't know is how I might have voted on that project. I was able to review the entire hearing by viewing the archived footage of the hearing, and so I am fully informed about how that project ended up. And so I believe I owe it to the public, and in particular the citizens of the 5th District, since this California Valley Solar Ranch project is in my district, to tell them that I would have voted for the motions to accept the environmental impact report and to approve a conditional use permit for the project. In plain English, I would have voted to support the project. The second item I wanted to speak about also concerns the California Valley Solar Ranch. There was an article in yesterday's paper, actually it was a letter to the editor, speculating about whether or not county staff and this commission might have left the county financially exposed due to a failure, financial failure of that particular project. And the answer is an emphatic no. The staff and commission were very diligent about making sure that the conditions of the project fully protected the public. I'd like to just read one of the conditions in part. It's called decommissioning fund. In order to adequately protect the county and its citizens in the event the applicant or its successors or assigns cannot complete the expected 25-year project lifespan, cease ongoing business operations, or abandon the project and or the property for whatever reason, the applicant shall enter into an agreement with the county commission, and then you'll get a form. A link that you can click on and ask your question and get a response. Alternatively, if you want to speak with an individual on planning staff, you can dial 781-5600. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an excellent comment and good public service announcement there with the contact information. I did get a speaker slip from Mr. Greening. Is this for items not on the agenda? Okay. I've actually brought it back to the commission already, but I'll reopen it since we got started so quickly. And if you'd like to speak, that's fine. We have a nice, relaxed day.
Good morning. Thank you. You did get started very quickly, but it's good to see Commissioner O'Grady back in his seat and evidently recovered.
Good to be back.
Yes, good to have all five of you here. I just wanted to, again, thank you for your work on the Paso Robles groundwater basin. The Board of Supervisors did, in fact, agree with most of your findings and concerns. They did separate out the Atascadero subbasin, and they are going to, as of the 22nd of this month, begin the process of developing a groundwater management plan for the area identified as being in level of severity 3. And that brings up a question and a comment. My question is, will your commission be involved in the drawing up of this groundwater management plan? And my comment is, whether or not you are formally involved with that as a product, I would strongly suggest that you be aware of the Paso Robles groundwater basin and any area identified as in certified as in level of severity 3 when you are undertaking the rural area plan. I think on a policy level, and you may want to deal with this on the policy level first, any place certified as being in level of severity 3 should have an overlaying planning area standard for the duration of the level of severity 3 so that you can prevent the creation of new expectations, new demands for water until those of the existing users can be brought into balance with the existing or whatever is done relative to the supply. In other words, the first, when we're talking about property rights, the property rights that truly count are the ones that exist now. And any creation of new property rights, new expectations, just shouldn't be happening where there's a level of severity 3. And we may be discussing more of this on an agenda item, but certainly when you come to the rural area plan, that should be built into it, and it's a discussion you should have. Thank you. But I remain with the question of whether, in addition to that, you will be taking action, at least to advise the supervisors on the groundwater management plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I don't see any other speaker slips on public comment on items not on the agenda, so I'm going to go ahead and bring it back to the commission again. And maybe staff would like to address Mr. Greening's question as they do their planning staff updates.
Sure.
Hint.
Good morning, Planning Commissioners. Cammie Griffin, County Planning. The only staff updates that I had besides attempting to answer Mr. Greening's question was to let you know about your future meetings because you do have kind of an odd schedule this month. You have another normal Thursday meeting on the 24th, but you also have a meeting on the 31st. And those fifth Thursdays we typically reserve for long-range planning items or large items, and in fact you have one of each on that day. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. As to Mr. Greening's question, my understanding was if the commission would make a recommendation to the board on a groundwater management plan. My understanding of that is that that is something that the board does as part of their duties as the flood control district. So it's not something typically that comes to the Planning Commission. But since we're not very far into that process, that's something that we can evaluate when it comes up.
Okay, thank you. Nothing on the consent agenda. So we move into our hearings. And we actually have requests for continuances of items 1, 2, and 3. So we may be getting to items 4, our Shandon community plan a little sooner than we thought. And but let's go ahead.
On his project. We are looking for a date recommended to the continuance to be June 23rd of 2011. And staff supports that. And the applicant also has indicated that he would like that date in the future.
Okay. I don't suppose we have any public comment on this continuance item. I don't think so. It's my district, so unless there are any questions from the commission, I'm going to go ahead and make.
Is that the you will be here on that day? Is it one? I remember in June you said you were going.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to be here on June 23rd.
Okay, so since it is in your district, do you want to request a different date or not?
You know what? I'm not going to request a different date at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to go on June 23rd either, frankly.
Well,
but
Let me just say, I wish you would be here for this one.
We'll find out. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we continue this item to date certain June 23rd, 2011. Do I hear a second?
Oh, I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? No. Okay, 5-0 to continue to June 23rd, 2011. Thank you. And let's see. Hang on a second here. Okay, we go on to hearing item number two, Ramona.
Hearing to consider a request by Napomo Gateway LLC for a third time extension of a conditional use permit, county file number DRC 2005-00007, supervisorial district for Bill Robeson for Brian Pedrotti.
Okay, Mr. Robeson.
Thank you. This is a request for a third time extension for the Mayor and I conditional use permit. The applicant is Napomo Gateway LLC, and the DRC number is 2005-00007.
Okay.
This is an extension. The third time extension covers the CUP, which was for a three-story, 71-unit motel, two buildings that totaled about 38,500 square feet. It is near the 101 and West Taft interchange, just south of that. Frontage Road is here to the east of the project, and it is located at 549 Hill Street in the community of Napomo. Here's a close-up of the parcel and showing that it is in the commercial retail land use category. It's a narrow piece of property. It's about 100 feet wide, and we'll take a quick look at the site plan. An aerial photo just to show you some context. The 101 and West F interchange just to the north. This is kind of how the project was to be situated. Parking here to the west, and a linear building going basically north to south on the eastern portion of the property. Elevations. The findings that your commission must make are that substantial work could not be done, and the reasons for that were out of the control of the applicant. The original findings for the first two time extensions can still be made, and there have been no changes in the character, the site, or the capacities of the community. Resources, basically water. And I think your commission has an updated NCSD letter, which was not in your packet. So I'd like to just bring your attention to that letter. And if you look at that letter, the second paragraph down basically is saying that the intent to serve termination date for the reference project has been extended out to 3/25 of 2012. So that satisfies that that finding a little bit more and justifies it for your commission. And the last on the screen, on the slide, would be that the original findings used to approve the conditional use permit can still be made, and that is still remaining true. Staff is recommending that the third time extension for the conditional use permit, based on the findings in Exhibit A, be approved by your commission, and I can answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Robeson. Does anybody have any ex parte on this item? I don't think so.
No.
Do you have any questions or anything, Mr. Irving? I mean, Mr. Murphy? Go ahead.
On the traffic was a safe capacity would still be met by the project if it went ahead.
According to General Services, the level of severity in that area remains the same. And I believe it actually improved because of the Willow Road extension, but I can let Glenn answer that question.
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I would have to actually look into it a little bit more, but if
Willow Road is in the final processes of completion, at least the phase one, and phase two will be going. In any addition, any traffic impacts in Napomo will, at least on the west side of the freeway, should be minimized with Willow Road. That's what we're anticipating.
Okay. In terms of no changes in the land use element in item A or E or even in B, when we're making that statement, is that affecting this project, I guess is what it said. So is that there's literally none affecting this project, or there's none that are that affect it in a manner that we should be concerned about? I mean, has there literally been no changes in all of the general plan or land use elements affecting this project for that time period?
I'm not aware of any, Bill.
That's correct. There's been no changes, so
literally
from the date of approval of this project, so nothing would really affect that, the approvability.
All right. That's all I've got.
Okay. I don't see anything from anybody else. Do we have anybody? Okay. Anybody from the public would like to speak about this item? Don't have any speaker slips. Okay. I'm going to bring it back to the commission. Mr. Murphy, would you like to make a motion? Here's your chance.
Okay, I move that we approve the third time extension for conditional use permit DRC 2005-00007 Mariani. And do we have to accept the findings? Is that necessary?
According to the findings and conditions.
According to the findings and conditions.
And then extended to the date, the 325-2000.
No, I think we're extending it to September.
Whatever it is.
29th, I believe, 2011, which is only basically six months from now.
Okay. Is that the right date, you guys?
That's what the...
My staff report's put away.
That's what the recommendation was.
Under the recommendation, the first time extension...
Excuse me. Under page 2-1, the third time extension would be good until September 29th,
right.
2011. Correct.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Murphy, seconded by Mr. Topping. Ramona?
Commissioner Murphy?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Chairperson Christensen?
Yes. Okay, this item has had an extension granted to it till September 29th this year, 2011. Thank you very much. All right, we move on to item 3, and I guess I misspoke earlier. We had two requests for continuances, and then item 2 is a request for an extension. We don't have three continuances. But this item apparently has been requested to be continued. Ramona, do you want to announce it?
Hearing to consider a request by Vicki Burcham for a variance/coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2006-00221, Supervisorial District 2, Paul Sittig, project manager.
Okay, Mr. Sittig.
Good morning, Paul Sittig, current planning. This is indeed a request for continuance on calendar. Date chosen would be April 28th, 2011. As approved by both the applicant and Warren Hoag, head of planning. The request for continuance is due to delay in redesign. There's been a redesign of the project provided all of yesterday, or 2 days ago, March 8th, 2011, reducing the size of the structure. I've been provided with the footprints and for the various stories and also the site plan, but no elevations. And none of these graphics have been provided to the advisory council in time for them to review it on a monthly cycle of reviews. This project was scheduled with the intention that such information would be provided and available well in advance, but the applicant and agent were not able to come to some agreement until this late date. So this was oversight in various parts. As such, information is available to some degree, and more of it is forthcoming. And I've talked with the advisory council, land use committee chair, Larry Fishman, and he's approved the item to be scheduled for the next April agenda item.
Okay. Do we have any questions before I ask for public comment? Mr. Topping?
Why don't you see if there's public comment, and then I have a couple of thoughts.
Mr. Grady, do you want me to wait till? Okay. Do I have any public comment on this issue?
It's on a road right-of-way that has no paving yet, and will require grading out at the toe of the slope of several properties. There's a side slope along there, so the question that concerned me was the slope stabilization on the county right-of-way portion. And I don't know whether this is a county-maintained street or not, but the question is going to be what are the measures to stabilize that slope in front of all those properties in the future, and where would a turnaround be? And so perhaps those issues can be forwarded to us before the next review.
Okay. I can speak to someone now, but I think probably next review would be more...
At this stage, we're looking at a hearing on continuance.
Sounds good.
And last but not least, I would personally appreciate being able to see the geologist's report.
Can do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Topping. Those are good things for the staff to be aware of. Mr. O'Grady?
So I presume there'll be a revised staff report.
Correct.
In advance of that April 28th
yes.
meeting. And would you kindly include a copy of the negative declaration?
Yes, shall.
I couldn't download that 8-meg file.
Gotcha.
So thanks for sending it, but it didn't work. So
okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Mr. Topping, do you want to go ahead and make a motion?
Yes. I'd like to move the recommended action, adopt the negative declaration. Continue this until April 28th.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Topping, seconded by Mr. Murphy. Ramona?
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Chairperson Christensen?
Yes. Okay, so this item number 3 has been continued until April 28th of this year. Okay, I'm going to just wait a couple of seconds for our staff to switch around. And thank you very much, Mr. Robeson, and give our congratulations to Mr. Pedrotti.
Can I say one other thing while they're switching around?
And Mr. Grady wants to say one other thing while they're switching around.
Ramona, I had neglected to say when I was speaking earlier about how I would have voted on the California Valley Solar Ranch project. I would like that to be for the record so that my... what I said there is in the notes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we have item number 4. I'm going to have Ramona announce it, and then I'm going to make a little comment before staff goes. Ramona?
Hearing to consider a request by County of San Luis Obispo and the primary Chandon applicants of Falling Star Homes Incorporated and the Peck Ranch entities to consider the Chandon Community Plan update. County file number LRP 2003-00004/G30013M. Jay Johnson, project manager.
Okay, two things. One is this is a request by the county, but it's also a request by specific applicants. Does anybody have any ex parte with the specific applicants?
No.
Okay. And the other thing is what we that the public may have originally planned to get here a little later in the morning, especially if they were coming from Chandon, because we did have some other items ahead of time that weren't noticed for continuance until late yesterday. So I just wanted to say that I assume that we will be hearing this item after lunch, and if we assuming we do, if there are public comments that want to be made after lunch, I will entertain a second public comment period today after lunch if there are members of the public that have arrived late, depending on when we get to public comment the first time around. So just wanted to kind of put that out there in case anybody's listening and is saying to themselves, oh, my goodness, they're reaching Chandon already, and it's only 9:28 in the morning. Okay, the other thing is that this item is something that's going to take obviously a lot of discussion. We have a number of hearing dates scheduled. So we're going to, because we are starting early today, we may not go all day till 5 o'clock. So if you are planning to get here at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and listen to us finish up, you might want to pay attention to whether we're still talking by then. Okay. With that, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to staff.
Madam Chair, Jim Morton from County Council. I just wanted to mention, as from a legal standpoint, everything is noticed for 9 a.m. So
I understand.
No legal. Okay.
Well, I understand.
I just wanted to remind the public.
Right. Thank you very much for that reminder. And, you know, as a courtesy, I've just figured if people are trying to, thought they could get here by 10, and, you know, and certainly we're not going to go into public comment at 10, but just,
right.
Just wanted to let them know. Okay. Thank you. Cammie or Mike or Mr. Okay. Wilkins?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and many do involve issues that are of regional and countywide significance. For example, the key issue being where should new growth go in the county? If not in Chandon, then where else would it go? Where is the most appropriate place? Because we know there will be growth. In fact, the latest census has shown that in the North County we had substantial growth over the last 10 years, as well as in the South County. So those are things that need to be taken into account. Will other communities accept growth? And we know there are challenges in terms of infrastructure, in terms of costs, and of course political will as well in those kind of decisions. So that needs to be kept in mind. What communities will accept the growth? So where is it most appropriate, considering strategic growth, considering resources, and other factors? And that's an issue that's raised by this update. As far as strategic growth goes, as you know, strategic growth policies and principles are adopted into the county general plan, and they state that we need to direct growth into existing urban areas as a first priority. And so this Chandon Community Plan is really an initial example of how the county can do a strategic growth plan for a complete community, providing and planning for infrastructure and the cost of infrastructure. In fact, this is the first plan, community plan that the county has done that includes a component for infrastructure funding and financing and planning, and that's actually Chapter 8 of the community plan. So that's actually a first for the county that we're going to be considering. We should also keep in mind that the board has adopted infrastructure funding and planning policies, and they call for directing infrastructure into urban areas and prioritizing the provision of infrastructure in our county's communities. And Chandon is a good base, has a good base to build on for community expansion. For example, as you know, Chandon has schools, it has park, it has an existing water system, it has CSA to provide the water service, and it has a grid street pattern as well. So it does provide a good base for community expansion. As we do community plan updates, we should also keep in mind that there will be impacts from doing any kind of a community plan update. In fact, as we found out in the EIR, the existing general plan, or one of the no project alternatives, still results in about 6 Class 1 significant unavoidable impacts. So you're going to have impacts as a result of any kind of comprehensive community planning effort. What your commission will need to do, of course, is weigh the potential impacts and costs of community expansion with the benefits. And there are many things to weigh, and we're going to try to explain those to you during this hearing and the following hearings as staff sees it. But there are benefits definitely to consider, such as smart and for strategic growth, such as the benefits of potential economic revitalization for the community, where this would be very beneficial, providing needed, desired services and opportunities for local residents. And we've heard from past surveys and community input that residents are interested in having some more services, such as grocery store and other services, and of course then there's jobs. There's opportunities to provide jobs for residents through this planning effort. And so those are all things that your commission will need to weigh, the cost versus the benefits. And there will be impacts, but the question is, do the benefits outweigh the impacts, and can those impacts be mitigated, and how should they be mitigated as best as possible? And finally, just a word on the planning that we're doing. As far as the timeline that we're looking at, it's a 25-year planning horizon in this plan. Most of our plans have been 20 years. This is 25 years. There's a build-out figure that Jay will talk about that is about 5,000 people. Supplemental staff report, and we've made copies of that. It's available the right side of the room, the front. The staff report focuses on two issues, agriculture and water, as far as consistency with general plan policies. And that report was requested by your chairperson, and so we were glad to provide that. We will be providing early next week, we'll be sending to your commission a complete policy analysis dealing with all general plan policies that are applicable, so that you'll have in advance of the March 24th hearing to mull over before we get into more detail on general plan policy consistency at the next hearing. But we did want to provide you with a couple of real big issues that I'm sure are on your mind, and that's water and agriculture. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Jay for the more detailed presentation.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Jay Johnson, planning staff. What I will be covering is in three chunks, if you will. I'll summarize the staff report that was in your packet, and then I will also cover five land use scenarios, and Mike somewhat touched upon that. In fact, I'll probably be redundant with some of the stuff Mike already mentioned. That also is available to the side of the chamber here for the audience to pick up. It's a single-page handout that your commission received this morning. That is also will be broken down in slides and up on the screen as we get to that after I summarize the staff report. During that discussion on the five land use scenarios, there are two line items in that table that you received that would be our opportunity to discuss agriculture and water, as Mike mentioned. And then lastly, we'll go back and we'll take a look at some of the questions. We'll take a look at the questions that were asked back at the January 31 study session. So with that, go through the staff report here just to remind everyone where Shandon is, about 18 miles east of 101 on 46, where 41 and 46 come together. We had also mentioned back at the study session that the Shandon Community Plan efforts are based on this study area boundary that was established by the board with input from the advisory council. And in essence, what this line is the outer limits, if you will, of how far the plan would have gone or where the urban reserve line would go, expansion areas would go. This would be the outer limits of that, and so the plan would be contained in this area. You can see on the area that we also have overlaid on here are the existing land use categories of the town, which is mostly the yellow, single family, in the large chunk of public facility. The recreation on the map is the 11-acre park, and I will be getting into the land use mix and how that fits in with the existing community in a little bit. So as Mike summarized, this is a comprehensive community plan is very different from how we've dealt with this in the past. This is the first community plan where we're looking at it as a community rather as a subset of a larger planning area, and taken as a when we in the past have taken on a large planning area, the communities would get not necessarily marginalized, but not the individual focus that we were able to attribute or give to Shandon. So we're looking at the land use mixes. How will growth happen? As Mike mentioned, this is decisions that the commission will have to forward on to the board in terms of a recommendation. Where do all these things go? What are the impacts? Shandon has two creeks that form a river that are dry most of the time. The water, when it does flow, it's flowing underground. How do we cross the creek when we add development to the east side of the San Juan Creek? All of these things are looked at comprehensively, and that's why it's important today to look at this overarching big picture issues to give some direction as to the magnitude of that plan. As we'll see, there are a range of choices here. It's part of our hearing and being out in the community and is that this should remain a small rural community. And so we understand that, and hopefully the plan, when said and done, will retain that. Again, we're looking at a 25-year scenario. When we compare the plan that staff's recommending to the one that was looked at in the public review draft in the EIR, seen two significant changes in the amount of growth, and that was due to two subdivisions that both happened on the east side of the San Juan Creek, both result of the old antiquated mapping of Shandon done in map book A back in the day, and most of those wasn't even legally recorded. But without those, the growth rates in Shandon, when you look at the other vacant lots in Shandon, would have been one or two houses a year. And that scenario in of itself would take 200 years to reach what the current general plan says. So obviously the past growth isn't necessarily should dictate where future growth will happen. But when we look at those two subdivisions that added 62, I think, additional homes in the early, from 2001 to 2004, there isn't really an opportunity for that even to happen again. When we look at the commercial growth, there has been no new commercial buildings in Shandon. The last commercial building I understand to be was actually the market was rebuilt in 1964 when it was had a fire. We've had five land use permits for commercial projects, most notably being service stations, and Shandon used to have service stations, but those have failed for a variety of reasons, most notably the connecting to the water system and having a sewer system. The high school was built in 1972. The Caltrans corporate yard next to the high school was built more recently than 72. So where we're going with this is that the plan, a real key to a town like Shandon of seeing change in growth in terms of commercial or additional residential growth, is tied to the needed infrastructure. And most importantly, in terms of the way the land use ordinance works, is the lack of a sewer. And to just take a glance at how subdivisions happen in the single family category without a sewer, you're looking at best at half-acre lots, in some cases one-acre lots, depending on percolation rates, et cetera. When a sewer comes in, that automatically goes up in the single family in most cases to six or seven units an acre. So it's a significant difference. And when you look at the vacant lots within Shandon, the ability to add new homes is very limited due to the lack of not having a sewer. Commercially, the lots in Shandon along Center Street are small. There's one lot that would be larger, and so to fit in a septic system that meets the Regional Water Quality Control Board requirements, that meets the building code requirements, is challenging. I've had conversations back in my days when I worked at the Permit Center with interest in building in, on Center Street in Shandon, and it's almost always the case that someone leaves, I won't be able to fit a septic system on this site and get the square footage I need to establish a use that would be desirable. So all of this, when a plan like this is adopted, will be change. When you're looking at a town that has seen little change, and there will be, by adding a sewer and getting over the hurdles with the infrastructure, this will be significant change in Shandon. And this change will be irreversible. And so having looked at the comments received on the public hearing draft of the plan, you'll notice that the opinion and the vision that people out there vary from some folks wanting and some agencies suggesting this shouldn't happen at all. And so when we get into the five land use scenarios that we've laid out in this table, that is one of the choices that the Planning Commission can direct the board or recommend to the board. So when we're talking about changes, Mike talked about this, going from 1,200 folks to 5,000 folks won't happen overnight. It's going to take years. There's some, you looking through Chapter 8, the infrastructure financing plan, there's significant costly infrastructure needs before that can happen in the magnitude of $14.5 million for the first phase to happen, to bring the first phase of the sewer on, to add to the water system. Those types of things, during the current economic times, it's just not feasible at this time. And we'll see, and I'll be pointing out the master plan areas on the map in a little bit. We anticipate, and it's been the notion with this arrangement, that one or two of the master plan areas would come on line. And so the actual built environment in Shannon is significantly smaller than 400 acres. When the public review draft was released last year, allowing for room for 8,000 people, 8,100 people, much larger than what we're proposing today, you could see that in some areas that goes to the boundary on the study area, pushes to the easterly side of the study area, and included a bit of the about 20 acres on the what is known as the Emser property, that 400 acres of grapes south of the community. There had been one time that that family had been part of the community plan of primary applicants. In fact, their representative is here this morning. And so that the piece I'm speaking of, the what's familiar, commonly referred to as the Emser piece, is the large table grape vineyard to the south of town. And the other thing we did, and this was staff's doing, we extended a flag stem out to the detached commercial service piece. You'll see in retrospect we're not fond of that idea, and we changed up on that. It's still important that piece is part of the plan, and you'll see that 24-acre piece actually replaces land that is zoned commercial retail on the other side of that little creek to the west, and we'll have a look at that as well. So now at the hearing draft that's before you today is a more contained urban reserve line with two major expansion areas shown in red, and then the detached commercial service piece also shown in red. And this area would allow the town to expand from add the residential areas that really there isn't room within the existing boundaries to to add, with the exception of a small part we'll see of, actually not a small part, probably about 20 acres on the Falling Star piece that's actually in the urban reserve line zone single family. But this will allow for the growth and then room for more growth in the future, and particularly commercially, to where we're not leapfrogging and scrambling around for more commercial land sometime in the future. So the expansion areas in terms of acreage, just for comparison's sake, the piece on the Peck Ranch, which is north, the piece on the Peck Ranch, which is north and west of the community park, looks a little bit like the profile of an eagle heading west, is about 98 acres. The detached commercial service piece is about 24 acres, but the standards in the plan would, it wouldn't be 24 acres of development. It would be greatly reduced for a variety of reasons. And then lastly, on the east side of town is an expansion area of about 122 acres that includes a portion of the Falling Star master plan area and all of the Halpin master plan area. And then a tier of lots on the very southerly edge on the east side of the creek, which is what we refer to as Peaceful Valley. So in terms of residential land use, land use mixes for the town, I think what I'll do is I'll go ahead and put the land use plan up and work off of this. Is that the intent, as Mike touched upon, is to provide the opportunity, to provide the zoning, the land use mix for the opportunity for residential growth, commercial growth, in a balanced situation, to where the amount of that services, shopping opportunities, job opportunities can come to Shandon. We'll see that there's a lot of influences before that could actually happen, but the notion behind the land use plan is to provide for those. So there is, based on the years of work we've done, and that would be an indication of how that could happen. That particular strip is due to a pipeline easement through the property. You'll also find we will have discussions about the school district and where additional schools may go. We show on the land use plan, in all of our land use plans, we show generalized locations of where schools may go. Ultimately, it is up to the individual school district for the placement of schools. Lucy Amar down in Napomo, for example, for economic reasons, et cetera, built their high school on ag land. That happened to work. It wasn't on the exact school symbol where county planning showed a school symbol. So the fact that there's a blue school symbol on the east side of town doesn't mean right there would be a school one day. In fact, with more recent communication from the school district, they're confident and are suggesting to the county that they would can handle the expansion on their two campuses that have room to grow, and they would rather approach it that way than seeking a school site. Likewise, you'll see green asterisk for potential park sites. That doesn't mean a park will go at each of those dots, but that's about the number of parks and the spacing between the parks that will need one day at build-out down the road to meet that need. The community park that there is today is fantastic. It's one of the great elements of Shandon, the mature trees. It gets a tremendous amount of use. And this is one of those features that Mike touched upon that Shandon has as a basis to build from. In addition to the other features, is the park. Two other key notations on this land use plan are the two stars of the two potential sewer sites, and that's something your commission will have to be weighing in on, is to where to recommend which of those would be most appropriate. And there's advantages and disadvantages in both places. So those, that's in essence the land use mix. We see the commercial, you know, building from the existing Center Street outward. We see the mixed use folding in to where in the new expansion areas on Peck Ranch or over on Falling Star, that could be brand new mixed use to where you would have a store with a dwelling above it or attached to the building in the rear. In the heart of town, in the existing town, you see a great deal of mixed use that shows up a pink on the land use plan that we're not suggesting that be torn down and people come in to do brand new mixed use. This would be a transition zone to where as we grow from Center Street outward into the area north of the park on Peck Ranch, that the people that own property there have a choice. They can add businesses to their property. They could choose to totally remodel and do a commercial building with living upstairs or behind. But it's a situation to where we have outlaid in the plan that can remain residential as long as the folks that own the property choose for that to be residential. So as I mentioned, the master plan areas, and this is a quite unique feature for a community plan in this regard. This is a relationship the board, an agreement the board entered into in 2007, and to combine the community plan efforts with the private amendment requests on Falling Star and Peck Ranch. The reason you see Halpin listed as a third master plan area is that at one time that had been part of Falling Star, so there's some change in ownership, and we've retained at least a portion of the Halpin piece in the plan. This map shows the entire holdings of the three property owners, at least within the realm of the study area. The Peck Ranch goes for many thousands of acres to the west and south of Shandon. So the Peck Ranch is not just contained in the study area. It goes on and on. Likewise, Falling Star has other holdings in the county, as does Mr. Halpin. But these are the parts that are in the study area, and then more so the specific pieces that are inside the urban reserve line. And so when we made the determination to go from the public review draft to the public hearing draft, the community, we spoke about this at the study session, that because commercial tends to lag behind residential, Shandon will have additional people living in it once the infrastructure is in place and this gets going. We'll have additional people living in it that will need to still go elsewhere to get services, to buy gas, to buy groceries. There are two markets in town, and actually I encourage anyone to visit them. It's not an advertisement, but that they have a surprising range of goods and services in there. But it's not what we would traditionally do for big shopping, as my mom would call it. There's the libraries there. It's 400 square feet, maybe, and it's open twice a week. As I mentioned, Shandon used to have gas stations. When the Caltrans rerouted the highway, had a significant influence on that as well. Once commercial does start to show up and a business shows up in Shandon, say it employs 50 people or a couple of businesses that employ 50 people or more, doesn't mean that they're going to live in Shandon. We mentioned this in a study session, that they could live in Paso Robles and pass a known friend on the highway every morning. The land use mix will provide the opportunity for Shandon to have multifamily. Shandon doesn't have multifamily zoning. I assure you, well, we know there's at least one property that has four houses on one lot, and the assessor recognizes that as multifamily. But I can assure you there's multifamily living occurring in Shandon. It will be very important that we're careful of how that's structured. The community has stated they don't want to see it concentrated. We understand that. The densities we're proposing are much lower than other communities, but yet we feel it's in there to create that mix to retain a rural community feel to it and bring that feature to Shandon to where it can be a choice for residential occupancy. The other thing is the plan is structured to address workforce housing. And right now, and I'm not speaking of low and very low, I'm speaking of the whole range here of workforce housing that is above the median income. Shandon currently has an ample supply of lower income housing due to the nature of the economy. So when it comes time to residential projects coming on board, we'll see that the inclusionary housing ordinance provides relief for Shandon's circumstance, so we're not adding to that current situation. So when we speak of workforce housing in Shandon, we're speaking of a full range. In fact, to bring in housing that would allow people at market rate that can afford whatever they want to also locate in Shandon, to where we have larger lot development in Shandon. And so the plans, one of the goals is to provide the opportunity for this to happen. And the visions vary. You're looking through the comments received, the visions vary from the vision you read in the plan that we created to the vision that the folks on the advisory council may have or folks that aren't in the room may have. So the visions vary. There are many, many hurdles for this community plan to be implemented. Cost, change, those are the key hurdles. The environmental impacts, the water, the impacts to ag. Though as we get into the details, all of the details we can get through one day. We can iron those out. But it's the big picture stuff that we'll discuss today and maybe at the next hearing to walk through and settle on and to help shape the plan to where at least we're providing that opportunity and create that vision. And so with that, we'll look at the land use scenarios, or does anyone need a break other than me? So these.
Yeah, at some point we're going to have a break, but I didn't know if you were going to be finished sooner or later.
I've got a few more minutes in.
Okay, because it's only 10:09, so we aren't scheduled for a break yet. But unless you really.
Reduced project alternative, 4,000 people is also in the environmental impact report. And then the last two are different. Again, as we mentioned, these are outcomes. These are possible outcomes. This would be to let the existing general plan play out, to not adopt the community plan as being recommended, or adopt portions of it to fit into the existing general plan, with one particular caveat, and that is the existing general plan actually has a policy program in it to build a sewer. So we've broke that down into what it would look like under the existing general plan with a sewer and what it would look like without a sewer. Again, when we have a sewer, you're able to subdivide the existing land into more lots. So with a sewer, you're looking at about 2,800 people, and without a sewer, you're looking at about 2,000 people. So you're about 800 different there. And then the total number of units simply in the second line below population. step down with each of the plans. So the plans go from larger to smaller, from left to right. If people have an understanding of commercial floor area, what is a 14,000 square feet mean? What is and so the existing market, I think, is something in the order of 3,000 square feet. I'll have to check the market study for that. A larger supermarket may need 40,000 square feet that we're seeing today. And we will also see that a market of that scale of bonds won't show up in a town until about 14, 15,000 people. A large office that houses 200 employees might be 50,000 square feet if you're designing software. 10,000 square feet may only house two people and some large equipment. So there's this range out there that when we look at our individual houses that just use a typical being 2,000 square feet, you can get an idea of how that is. And so back when we were looking at the public review draft, I'll just say it, 1.3 million square feet of floor area was way, way, way too much. And it was part of our education. It was part of the schooling that we went through because, quite frankly, no one knew. When we explored this, we researched this, people would say, we don't know what Shandon would need because it's not on 101. It's not 5 miles from Fresno. It's 18 miles from Paso Robles. It's not at the crossroads on two highways next to an Air Force base. Tons and tons of factors that go into this. And so if anyone's curious, the town it's most like, it's much smaller, but the town it's most like is Tulare. So go see Tulare and you'll see what this could be one day, I guess. Maybe not. More importantly, for this to happen, we have to convert ag. With the exception of maybe 50 square feet under the plan, under the town existing, and with the exception of the river bottoms and the riparian zones, it's all prime soils. It's all agricultural soil. But not all of it's zoned agriculture, and that's a key component. A good portion of the expansion areas is zoned residential rural. A good portion of the master plan areas, the Falling Star piece, is already in the urban reserve line. It is zoned residential single family. It is zoned residential suburban and commercial service. So what are the changes on ag conversion? And it goes down from 340 acres to the current draft of being 180 acres and then down to none if things stay the same. The 20 acres on the existing general plan would be for a smaller sewer plant, which we're showing to be 31 acres under the public hearing draft. So this is a key factor in weighing in on this project. So when we look at a community plan and we look at the amount of effort that goes into it, it's a comprehensive approach to planning. One of the decisions that has to be made is this trade-off. You can't grow this community and probably any of the communities in the North County without removing some ag land. So we're looking at it, and when you look at the ag land on the aerial that's being proposed for conversion, those two spots that are zoned agriculture have, in at least in recent history, have not been in intensified agriculture. They've been grazing at best, and they're near the urban area. So maybe, Mike, is this a time to talk about ag? Okay. So when and likewise, as you remove the ag to add urban development, you can see the size of the town steps down with each of these scenarios. So again, looking at the middle columns, we're looking at somewhere in the order of 600 acres needed for growth, and we're looking in somewhere in the order of 150 acres of that currently being zoned ag. So that's a decision that has to be weighed. Next is the change in water demand. Now, this is based on a relationship to the analysis that was done for the study area. The study area has a, for the 2009 baseline, for the study area was 2,047 acre feet a year being pumped from in and around Shandon. So as we work through these, you'll see that the acre demand with the change in demand, acre feet per year, is rather high with the public review draft of 293. And now this is at the end of the day, 30, 40 years down the road at build out. So as we work, the growth works through this, we won't strike these relationship numbers for 20 years or more. So building up to that, so we're looking at just comparing at the end. And that's important to distinguish because as we build to these numbers, we won't be, if we went with the public review draft, we won't be drawing 293 more acre feet a year for many, many, many years. Likewise with these other scenarios. And as you look down to the reduced project one, and then you look at the existing general plan with the sewer, it's actually advantageous. And this hinges on, and you'll have to decide if this is something that the commission, your commission agrees with, hinges on a very key element, is that to put the sewer plant in removes alfalfa. And that's why you see a negative number with the existing general plan of adding, removing some alfalfa, and that actually would go down. We also will see that part of the, one of the key features of the wastewater treatment plant is for replenishment of the groundwater basin. And this is an advantage of having a wastewater treatment plant designed that way. There was one time we were looking at maybe using recycled water to apply to irrigate certain crops that are allowable to use on landscapes, to use in parks. There is many reasons why that was no longer proposed. But now one of the benefits is replenishment of the groundwater. Now, what that does, we understand, is it doesn't replenish immediately in Shandon due to the various aquifer layers, and it tends to migrate westerly toward Whitley Gardens and through the Estrella River that way. And we will also see down the road that that's actually a positive thing for the overall Paso Robles groundwater basin, that water does migrate. So there's a glance at the change in water demand at the end of the day. Class 1 impacts. Now, this on the screen doesn't break down the different types of what those impacts are, ag, water, air quality. So, and I think we all would be of the opinion not all Class 1 impacts are equal in terms of at least there will be varying opinions that a Class 1 impact on aesthetics may not have the same value as Class 1 impact on air quality or groundwater supply or impacts to agriculture. But as Mike touched upon, the existing general plan, things left alone, will have, still have, if we were to do an EIR just on those, would still have 6 or 7 Class 1 impacts. Certain things with life that we do when we drive a car, regardless if it's in town or if it's to Paso Robles for shopping, will have impacts to air quality. When we build buildings, it has impacts to the aesthetics. It has, if you're anywhere near a cultural resource, the opportunity to impact a cultural resource is there. The next line to discuss would be infrastructure costs. This, again, when we get into the public facility financing plan, we'll see this is expensive. This is a roadblock. This is a hurdle that must be overcome for anything to happen with the community plan. But in terms of comparative, what would it cost for a typical house in Chandon based on all of these infrastructure items? Well, when you look at the public review draft, you have more people paying, more houses paying, and so, but you also have a few more infrastructure items. There's certain infrastructure items, improvements to the highway, the first phase of the sewer, and the first upgrades to the water system that are going to be required regardless of what happens. So when you compare the $10,000 to $15,000 infrastructure cost per unit, keeping in mind that that's over 40 years in our analysis. So when you look at the public hearing draft, it may be higher, but that's less people over a 25-year period. And we think that's a critical distinction because of our experiences. Glenn had touched upon Willow Road happening in South County, that we do not want to see a public facility financing plan that has us chasing money for an infrastructure improvement, and we are 10 years behind before we finally catch up. And so that's an important distinction. So but as we head downward into the smaller projects, you'll see that obviously goes up because we still need to do a certain amount of infrastructure up front. So in the reduced project, we're looking at more than $30,000 a unit. With the existing general plan, when you add a sewer, you're looking at more than $35,000 per unit. And then if you keep things the way they are without a sewer, really the only cost the Chandon will be looking at one day, and these are programmed in with the CSA 16 water district, is upgrades to their water system. So they would be looking at about $10,000 a unit to pay for that. A brief explanation as to why the public hearing draft seems to be exact or precise. It's not exact, but it's not a range, is because that's the one we actually looked at. So the public facility financing plan looked at that in detail. We went back and estimated those other four categories. One last thing to kind of focus in on the four scenarios that we've outlined here is the commercial feasibility. Again, this is an important component to be a more complete town, to bring the goods and services to Chandon, is that feasibility. The market study that was done for the plan identifies 4,000 people, and that's why it's an alternative in the EIR, is the minimum for I'm just going to quote it because it's one of those phrases. 4,000 is needed to attract and support a small but healthy array of retail and service outlets. Point is, that's the minimum needed to bring these things to town. And so there's not much science involved into the option in the scenarios that are larger. That's obviously above minimum. And if it stays the way it is, that's below minimum. And the undesirable outcome, I would think, with that is that the commercial development in Chandon would see the trends it's seen, which has been beyond difficult to achieve. Another point to make in terms of a grocery market, that the public hearing draft actually starts to approach but doesn't quite approach, it may take a few years after that, is that it's estimated in the market study that a population of about 6,000 would attract what you would call a United Grocers or a Spencer's Fresh market level market, an independent market into Chandon rather than a Vaughn's. Other examples for a pharmacy, really, it was determined by the market study, won't show up unless there's a medical office in town. Or maybe to characterize it, if there's a medical office, then the opportunity to have a pharmacy goes up. So there's not a whole lot of, again, science into that, that the commercial feasibility increases with the potential population increases. One of the notes in the staff report is that retailers want to know that the town will continue to grow, that it won't, they won't come into town, make investment into a town, and then see it stagnate. And so they like to see that that potential growth is there. We have many, many more details to discuss. We need to get into the water and ag policies to go over. The public needs to weigh in. And then I also would like to touch on the questions that came up at the study session. So I'm done with staff's presentation at this point. I'd be happy to answer the questions that came up in January now if you'd like. And then
I think we're going to take a break right this very second, and then come back, and we'll figure out what to do next.
Okay.
Okay, so 15 minutes, 10:43. Here we go again. We are coming back to order. It is Thursday, March 10th, and we're at the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Take it away, Mr. Johnson, or Mr. Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Wilkin, planning staff. We just wanted to make a couple of follow-up comments on this chart that's up on the screen. First of all, on the infrastructure cost per unit row, if you look to the very last row that Jay talked about, there's a $10,000 cost there under the existing general plan without sewer. And Jay pointed it out that that reflects the cost for upgrading the existing water system, and that's a fairly high cost. I wanted to just note that under the public hearing draft plan, there's a tremendous advantage to the existing residents of Shandon because that cost per unit for a water system upgrade would go down dramatically. And I don't know if you have the figure on that, Jay, but it's about $2,000. Compared to that $10,000. So that's a huge advantage for existing residents of the public hearing draft in terms of the water system upgrade. The other thing I wanted to talk about just briefly is the line having on in this chart that deals with water demand. If we could switch to that slide, I just wanted to touch on that. And also the discussion in the supplemental staff report that staff distributed dealing with water. If you look at those numbers there, they reflect the estimated change in water demand, and that's from the baseline of 2009 in acre feet per year. And what's important to note about these figures and also the figures that are the many figures that are in the water analysis in the supplemental staff report is that those are the change in net demand before mitigation. This plan requires mitigation or offsetting of that additional water use by a number of means. And, in fact, there's a standard in Chapter 9 that talks about this, and the idea is to offset water through using water conservation best management practices, engaging in a plumbing retrofit program, paying a fair share of costs of delivering additional state water to offset impacts on groundwater, and or participating in another kind of a fee program that would result in reducing groundwater pumping within the Paso Robles groundwater basin, not necessarily Shandon itself, but the whole basin. And remember that the issue here is to look at the basin as a whole. That was the premise of the resource capacity study for the groundwater basin, was to look at the basin as a whole. So those are ways that the plan requires the groundwater impacts to be mitigated. So just keep in mind that these figures that are up on the screen are figures before mitigation, and the same goes with some of the other figures that are mentioned in the supplemental staff report. For example, the change in groundwater storage levels, and I think that was between 1 and 10 feet. That was with the public review draft, the one with more population than what's being proposed here. But again, those levels are before mitigation. Unfortunately, we don't have a detailed hydrogeological evaluation of all the alternatives and what exactly the groundwater storage change might be with all the alternatives. But we did our best in trying to estimate what the change in water demand would be from 2009 before mitigation, and the plan requires mitigation. So I'll turn it back over to Jay, and Jay can talk about the respond to the questions that came up during the study session.
Thank you, Mike. Some of the questions that came up at the study session, I'll just run down them and I think take a few minutes and provide at least the best answers we have today. So the first one is, what is the status of the State Route 46 improvement funding? And I'll just turn over to Mr. Marshall. He received some correspondence from Caltrans on that matter.
Thanks, Jay. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I passed out before your meeting today item 4 for your Planning Commission. It states at the top, State Route 46 widening schedule. And basically, this is an email that I received from Chris Schaefer over at Caltrans, and it kind of goes over what the widening schedule is and some of the costs associated with State Route 46 East. If you have any specific questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them. There are copies out available for everyone at the desk.
We probably will have questions once we get to questions. Okay. I know I will.
Thank you, Glenn. I guess in quick summary, that it's essentially the information we had at the study session is that the funding for the part that will reach Shandon, the construction feature is yet to be funded. So then other question that came up during public testimony is regarding the transit needs in Shandon. And currently Shandon does have dial-a-ride access. I believe it's 3 days a week. The ridership is low. It is used from time to time. And the regional transit authority response to me is essentially they don't have a target population per se that would trigger setting up a fixed route out to Shandon to where, or even internal to Shandon. It would just depend on, as growth occurs, how's the ridership, how are the demands to use the options that are available today in terms of the dial-a-ride. Certainly as a town grows, we can do outreach efforts to draw attention to transit and to make that available to people of Shandon. The other generalized question is, would there be a consistency determination with the ag policies in the general plan? The answer is yes. We'll be starting with that today and building upon that in future hearings. Likewise with the economic element and the economic strategy and the safety element. And then lastly, the question was, what population is needed to support a substation? Are there alternatives to a substation? We spoke to the Sheriff's Department, in essence, is this, that they're really no information on what population would be needed for a sheriff's substation. Again, it's similar to what markets may or businesses may choose to arrive in Shandon due to its location as much as its population. So Shandon's location in the northeasterly corner of the county would have as much to do with it as the population base. However, what they did return back with us is they would be very interested in what's called a resident deputy. So essentially a deputy would live in Shandon. In terms of fixed improvements such as a building or structure for report writing. That's not necessary to add. They have access to the Highway Patrol now has a reporting office at the rest area just northeast of Shandon, and they also have some room available during the working day at the Cal Fire Station. But moreover, the sheriff's response is they also have, they can sit in their cars and do report writing as well, have access to their computers. Maybe not as comfortable, but that's available. So really the key here is to is for a presence in Shandon. I go once a month to the advisory council meeting. The sheriff is there. They're present. They give updates on the activity, how often they're out there, and I know the community greatly appreciates any attention or additional visibility and presence in Shandon they can receive. But at this time, it would be a resident deputy would be the response to that question. I believe we covered all of the questions that were raised. At this time, I think we're done.
Yay! thank you very much, Mr. Wilkin and Mr. Johnson. We're going to, I think we probably want to hold our questions because we're going to have a lot of them and go straight to public comment. And I don't have that many speaker slips, so everybody gets, I only have about 10 or 11. Everybody gets their full 3 minutes. And if you could go ahead and time them, that would be wonderful. Okay, so John Knight, followed by Greg McMillan with Michael Wynn on deck. Mr. Knight.
Good morning. My name is John Knight. I'm with J. Knight Consulting. I've been working on this project now going on 7 or 8 years. I know some folks in this room probably been working on this project now somewhere in the neighborhood 10 years. It's a long process. It's a complicated, very involved plan. There's a lot of different options and scenarios. It's not a perfect plan by any means, but I think it's a good plan, and I'd really like to see it move forward. I have some additional comments that are specific to what they call the detached CS site. So that's on the Peck property. I represent the Peck Ranch entities. And there's actually a 24-acre, I think Jay's going to try and pull it up while I'm speaking, but there's actually a 26-acre site that's located on the west end of town. And for all intents and purposes, it's sort of an orphan from the rest of the community. There it is on your screen now. On the west end, right where the creek goes through, I don't know if you remember, Jay mentioned there's actually a commercial, an existing commercial piece of property, zoned property. I think it had an old gas station on it 15, 20 years ago. This is a much larger piece of property in terms of area, but that area would actually be squeezed down once you start looking at Kit Fox pathways and corridors and other mitigation. But anyway, this is essentially a trade in exchange for that commercial piece of property. It's a good opportunity to provide some community, some services the community wants. Could be a gas station, could be a hotel, could be wine tasting. The property owners have had some interest from the neighboring vineyard about having a wine tasting facility on that site. It's about a mile and a half to 2 miles from the rest of the community. It doesn't make sense to connect that portion, that property, with sewer or water or the remainder of the services. And I think rather than placing this property and all of its standards and tying it to the master plan of the rest of the Peck property, it actually makes sense to pull it out and put it in the larger area plan. So the community plan would cover the urban reserve area, the area that's boxed in by red, and then this would be its own separate and independent master plan that is on the in the other plan. And I've spoke to Jay and Mike about this a little bit with the staff. I think there's good, valid reasons to do that. You would need to import some standards and requirements that are currently in the community plan and place them in the area plan. It would provide an opportunity for that property to be potentially developed earlier, and it wouldn't be tied to the remainder of the Shandon community plan, which is tied to the sewer, which is tied to bridge improvements, which is tied to highway improvements. The list goes on, and it will probably be many years, 10, 15 years in the future before you really see those improvements. So there's an opportunity there to get some of the services, I think, that the community needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. McMillan, followed by Mr. Wynn. Sue Left on deck.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, once again, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. I am Greg McMillan. I am the chair of the Shannon Advisory Committee. And the Advisory Committee believes, and we've written this to the Board of Supervisors, that this is basically an unfinished report. There are a lot of gaps here, a lot of things that we don't yet know, and I think it might be premature. And there was a time when we thought that maybe the economy would be driving this thing, and that doesn't seem to be happening now. Having said that, as the chair, I am now talking as a private citizen. In all due respect to Mr. Wilkin here, I think this project flies in the face of our strategic growth policies that we've done, that we've put together here. And it's because this is a fragmented part of the county. This is not being built on an existing around an existing community. And people say, well, San Miguel is the same way, but San Miguel has two freeway exits and on-ramps, and that makes it a lot different than Shandon. There's a program that is just beginning in the county with the Planning Commission to create a North County Habitat Conservation Plan, and I think that this project should wait until that plan and be incorporated in that plan, because I think that fragmenting the HCPs is not the way to go if what we're really trying to do is protect wildlife. As far as the shopping goes, I can tell you that it's not going to work, that there's people are going to be working in Paso Robles, and there's no way that a store in Shandon can compete with Food for Less. I mean, it's just not going to happen, and people are going to drive to work. They're going to stop at Food for Less on their way home, and like they do now, just pick up the bare minimum of stuff at the stores in Shandon. And having said that, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nguyen, followed by Sue Left, followed by with Paul Lee on deck. And Mr. Nguyen, I understand you're speaking for the RAC, so if you need a few extra minutes, I will grant them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thank you, Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak to you today. I do appreciate your courtesy, too, in releasing to the public the 9-page analysis, which is very helpful in understanding some of the questions that come up today. The Water Resource Advisory Council Committee is the oldest advisory group in the county. It's been here over 50 years. Mr. Senton, for example, who's in the audience today, not only is a water attorney and an inhabitant of Shandon, but was our chair for 10 years. And these people are very variegated in their interests and their backgrounds. They voted with only two exceptions to support the RAC recommendations to the Board of Supervisors and to yourselves. Here's the problem. This plan, in its current form, does not adequately address the key issues of water supply and wastewater treatment. It simply is inadequate. That's the bad news. The good news is you can do something about that. You can't write in the magic numbers today and get it all fixed today, but you can give very clear directions to staff so that they come back to you at an appropriate time. Shouldn't take too long, with an appropriate SEIR and with directions on how to fix this plan so that it's workable. The suggestion that you kick the can down the road because you have 25 years simply cuts both ways. If you have 25 years before this is a problem, then you have time to fix this plan today and in the next couple of months. A couple of months and 25 years don't make too much of a difference. Here's the problem. This is a water basin that has been certified by the Board of Supervisors as an LOS 3, level of severity 3. That's the highest level of severity possible. It doesn't mean you have time to fix the problem. You mean the problem has arrived. It's here now. It goes on to say that the entire basin is interconnected. This is not something that Shandon would be apart from Creston or Templeton could ignore Paso Robles. We're all together. The only partial exemption, as Mr. O'Grady knows, is the Tascadero sub-basin, which in some ways has a little different look. But everybody else is in the same thing together. So to say that something would regionally happen in an urban reserve line over here and wouldn't affect people 20 miles away simply flies in the face of the facts. Every study, every water study for the last 10 years has shown that this is a problem. These studies have been funded by a nearly miraculous collaboration between county and incorporated cities and mutual water companies, with lots of input from agriculture, with independent community service districts. How many times did that many people get together and agree? But they have. And they agree that we have a serious problem here and that new development needs supplemental water. We can't simply keep putting new straws in the basin, sucking out the water. The entire basin's interconnected. The message has been to conserve. And when you hear the message to conserve, I remind you, when you talk to people at Paso Robles and say conserve, you're not saying use less water so that somebody else can take it. You're saying use less water because you're virtually out right now, and you need this buffer in case hard times come, in case a drought comes. You're saving it in your own interest, not to transfer it someplace else. Ag offsets sound appealing, but ag offsets simply don't work. We don't know on any piece of land how much water is going to be used with what crop. In my lifetime here in this county, I have watched flood irrigation for alfalfa. It doesn't grow there anymore. I've seen lots of grazing land that used very little water suddenly is growing grapes and other valuable crops. This cannot happen this way. I urge you to resist the temptation to kick it down the street. Let's try to deal with it today. What can you do? One, do not certify the EIR, but ask sensibly that it be sent back for a supplemental EIR to adequately address the real water issues. Have them show you where the water is going to come from. Do they have access to state water? Yes. Do they have access to enough state water? It's not apparent that they do. That should be shown clearly if they do. Secondly, send the plan back for resolution this year of the question is, where will that water come from? And by the way, when it comes to a wastewater treatment facility, don't settle for saying you need a problem so we'll give you a design. Designs don't mitigate a wastewater treatment problem. Have them commit to constructing it. Then if you have a real wastewater treatment facility instead of blueprints, you have a way of treating the sewage. But without those changes, this thing isn't going to work. And I'm thankful that it's before you today and that you have a chance to turn it back on the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Sue Left, followed by Paul Lee from CAL FIRE, and then Jerry Bunin on deck.
Hi, my name is Sue Luft. I'm vice chair of the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and I served on the RAC subcommittee that reviewed and commented on the draft EIR for the Shandon Community Plan. I'm also a sub-area representative on the Paso Robles Basin Groundwater Advisory Committee. I'm speaking my own. I handed out a map that's included in the Paso Robles Basin Regional Groundwater Management Plan, as well as in the Resource Capacity Study for the Basin. This map graphically illustrates a decline in the groundwater levels in our basin over a 12-year period, and this is the current situation in our basin. The Basin Management Plan and the RCS should be discussed and included and referenced in the EIR for the Shandon Community Plan. The staff responses to the RAC comments on the community plan indicated that they did not give our comments serious consideration. I noticed some stuff's been handed out, and so maybe they are doing some further response, but the original staff response regarding Ag Policy 11 was confusing and inadequate. The staff's response regarding the impact of additional groundwater pumping for urban demand is of great concern. Any increase in a basin that is in serious decline should be considered significant. The fact that it might represent 0.5% of the total pumping of the basin in the future is not an adequate response. A voluntary stakeholder-driven process is currently underway in the Paso Basin. All the users of groundwater will be asked to conserve with the goal of stabilizing the basin groundwater levels. So how can we ask people to voluntarily reduce their water use if the county would approve a project that puts it increased demand on the basin? As Mike Wynn stated, level severity 3 was certified by our board. The resource capacity study clearly states that the groundwater basin is at or approaching its safe yield. The RCS has several recommendations for land use actions and for urban areas that do not have access to supplemental water, and I read that as to mean or do not have access to adequate supplemental water. New discretionary development must use best management practices and offset 100% of its new water use with non-ag water. We also have policies in our conservation open space element that speak to this, WR 1.13 and 1.14. 1.14 states that limitations shall be placed on further land divisions until plans are in place and funded to ensure that the safe yield will not be exceeded. And this is in case of basins that have a recommended or certified LOS 1 or 2. So unless supplemental water is provided to offset all new water use, the Shannon Community Plan should not be approved. The final EIR needs to state that water supply is a Class 1 impact in all scenarios and for all alternatives, unless all new water use is fully offset with non-ag water. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Lee, followed by Jerry Bunin, with Keith Larson on deck.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, Paul Lee, your County Fire, Cal Fire, Fire Marshal. Mr. Johnson here just did a wonderful job explaining what we're going to be looking at down the road, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years down the road from now. We talked about commercial development, residential development, even shopping. All that brings an increase in population, which for us, Cal Fire, County Fire, brings an increase in calls. Currently, what we have out at Shandon is a state facility that during the winter months has a county fire engine staff with two individuals. They have an enormous response area, all the way to the Monterey line, to the Kern line. They're even second or third due to the Carrizo Plain, which you are well aware of. With that, their primary mission is to protect the residents of the Shandon area and that extremely large area I just described. During the summer months, that all changes. That county engine is downstaffed. We use our volunteers to come in and staff that county piece of equipment, just like at the Carrizo Plain. And we all know that volunteers have lives too. We've all volunteered in our lives. We know the challenges that that comes with. That state engine is then staffed. So we have a county engine that's now downstaffed, a state engine that's staffed, and their primary mission is wildland fire suppression to protect the watershed. They do respond to any type of calls in that response area that I described when they're available. They can be dispatched to any type of wildland fire throughout the county as well throughout the state. When they're gone, that station is uncovered. So what really does protect Shandon? The Meridian Fire Station does. That's a 10-mile drive at the intersection of 46 and Branch Road. That's a 15-minute drive. So if they're second in to Shandon, that's a long time for that engine that's already staffed in Shandon to wait. If they're the first in engine, think about holding your breath for 10 minutes, being pinned in a car for 15 minutes, or trapped in a burning structure. What we're recommending is an augmentation to that staffing. Our winter months are fairly well. We tend to cover that well. But during the summertime, when that state facility, that state engine is drawn down to help fight fires throughout the county, throughout California, an additional two people to staff that station, so additional six or seven people to staff Shandon would greatly help with the increase in population. That's where we're at now. With an increase in population, that situation I just described is only going to get worse, is only going to get harder. So a recommendation to help with this increase in population if and when it does occur, or to help the problem now, is to staff that station. That is a recommendation we have brought to the board for the last several years to staff at that station. Times are hard. Financial responsibility is important. I leave that to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jerry Bunin, followed by Keith Larson, with Eric Greening on deck. I don't see Eric here, but...
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. We're not against this plan. I did speak with several of our builders who have about 50 years' experience building in the North County. I would say that the numbers I'm going to provide you are a swag. They call them a PFA, which is plucked from air. But they are based on experience. Last decade, the building absorption rate in San Miguel was about 20 to 25 units a year. We believe it would be 40 if you were to build out under the Shandon plan in the time frame of the plan. We know that's not going to be it. It's our expectation that the building rate in Shandon would be far lower than the building rate in San Miguel. That's because, of course, as you already know, it's distance from Paso Robles and distance from 101. The problem becomes the infrastructure fees and the development of the infrastructure. Lenders are no longer making money available in a construction loan to pay for your impact fees. So there's no chance in the world that somebody's going to be able to really come up with, in most cases, the money to pay infrastructure fees up front. They're going to, you know, we're going to be looking to get them paid at certificate of occupancy if we're lucky and building permit if we're unlucky. So that's going to be a real problem in terms of developing the infrastructure. In terms of competing for homes in Shandon and homes in Paso Robles, given the fact that Shandon is not going to have very much commercial development and not very much jobs, it's probably going to take that home to be $100,000 to $150,000 cheaper to be really competitive. Ballpark estimates, but that's what we kind of think it is. And there's just no way in the world. So a lot of our builders also do commercial. There's no way in the world that the commercial and residential are going to occur simultaneously. Commercial will wait for the rooftops. So thank you very much. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Always sobering to listen to. Thank you very much, Mr. Bunin. Keith Larson, followed by Eric Greening. I don't see Eric here. He has the last speaker slip. If anybody else wants to speak, now would be the time to get your speaker slip in.
Good morning. I'm Keith Larson, representing the city of Paso Robles. I'm the water conservation manager, so I'm here to talk about water. I'm going to reiterate some of the comments that Mike Wynn made and Sue Luft made regarding the inconsistency of the plan and its EIR with the recent Board of Supervisors LOS-3 determination for the basin. Of course, the LOS-3 determination is a huge realization for all of us that this basin is at or near the perennial yield, and so we need to take action now to implement some policies that start working in the right direction there. And clearly, this plan's EIR is inconsistent with that recognition. The determination of no significant impact relies on the use of agricultural water offsets for ag lands that are converted to housing. Why is this not appropriate, and why did the Board of Supervisors in their LOS-3 determination and policy recommendations recognize that? It's because of the huge potential for additional ag lands to be brought into production in this basin. And you can't just look at it on an individual development or a planning area basis. We have to look at it as a basin-wide issue. And so we really feel that the use of the agricultural offsets is not appropriate. And Mr. Wilkin, in his closing comments, talked about other mitigation measures. And that's what the recommendations of the LOS-3 policies really are about. It's how do you create other offsets besides agricultural offsets through the use of conservation, implementing conservation in residential development elsewhere in the basin. So we feel that the document in EIR needs more work. It needs to include a full discussion of those other types of offsets and how that is going to get to a no net increase in groundwater demand for this planning area. And we recommend that it not be approved without inclusion of such a discussion and how new development approvals for this plan area will be conditioned on meeting that requirement of no net agricultural water use and increase of that. I'm sorry, no net increase of groundwater use for the development of the area. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. So many speakers who spoke under 3 minutes. I'm shocked. I'm grateful. Anyway, thank you very much. I don't have any more speaker slips. Anybody else? All right. I'm going to bring it back to the commission. Do we need any staff response? Do we have any staff response?
Well, let's see here. I'll work down some of these, and Mike can look off of his notes. First of all, John Knight raised that to pull this out in place the detached piece, the commercial service piece, into the rural part of the Shandon-Carrizo area plan, and we would concur with that generalized notion to do that is appropriate. The land is would be replacing the commercial retail that is in that part of the plan. It doesn't need to be in the urban reserve line. The limitation on the land would, in terms of the amount it could develop, would be limited on their ability to have its own on-site well and provide its own on-site septic system. We understand the overall issue that's just been addressed or spoken to about water, but in terms of wastewater, a septic system in that location with a piece of property of that size shouldn't have any problems in being able to put in a septic system that would work fine for years. In fact, the septic systems in town, it's my understanding, have worked rather well. And so that, in terms of groundwater replenishment, is the septic systems do a very good job of that. And so the size of that would be limited to the capability of providing that wastewater on-site septic system. The other reason we wouldn't want to see the lines extended that far is the cost of extending the sewer line and water lines that far, and the fact that you would have to cross the river to do so. And we've made notation in the staff report and our other analysis that it's not practical to expand into the agricultural land north of the Estrella River, the 60 acres that's zoned agriculture, even though it's not productive agriculture, because of the need to cross the river with the sewer lines, the water lines, and roads. So the same logic would apply here. So in terms of staff supporting the notion to pull that in the rural plan, we would agree with that. We would also agree that we would need to bring in the design criteria and some of the features from the standards that apply to projects in Shandon and apply them to that site as well. So it wouldn't be free and clear of this, of the same rules that people in town would be faced with. It would just be bringing in those certain standards to that piece of property. And then lastly, one of the things that Mr. Knight brought up that would need a little bit of different opinion from staff is that the project would not need to contribute towards the infrastructure. He didn't characterize it that way, but it's true. The project would not have to contribute to the water or sewer system, but the project would generate traffic and would be responsible for providing mitigation listed in the EIR for improvements for the highway, and it would have to contribute road fees one day when that were the case. So that's just a distinction that I wanted to make clear that project would be contributing towards circulation improvements.
Did you want to ask a question right now, Mr.?
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, it would help me a lot to understand where these properties are if you could get the map up on the screen and then point out the two areas and maybe summarize your explanation.
Sure.
Because I didn't understand it.
I apologize. I look at it and I wasn't
sure
aware of the fact it wasn't on everyone else's screen. We're speaking of the detached commercial service piece that is on the north westerly corner of the Peck Ranch is shown on the screen. That site is shown to be 24 acres. To the west of that, where it shows the creek coming through, the little creek to the west, right at the intersection, there is a small amount of land in between that little, much more of a swale than a creek, but nonetheless, if you were out there today across from the grape fountain, is a pad from a previous service station. And so that property has retained its commercial retail zoning. It's zoned that today. So our recommendation is to simply move that over here and allow it to be larger to accommodate other uses than just simply a service station. It could be visitor serving. It could be a small inn. It could be agriculturally related sales. Mr. Knight mentioned wine tasting. That site would not be 24 acres of development. It would be a small portion in on a portion of that site. It would be limited by the same standards we would be applying as if it were in town. So that's what we're speaking of. The problem with, while it would be beneficial for that additional square footage to help pay for the sewer, the added cost of bringing the sewer from, let me go back to this map. This map shows a star under the word Estrella. How about that, if you know Spanish? That is a generalized location of one of the two sewer sites. So if the sewer site's located there, the pipe distance isn't that far. If the sewer site is down on the southeasterly corner of town, then you would be extending a sewer line from this detached piece all the way to the rest of the Peck Ranch development near the edge of the urban reserve line northwest. So you're looking at a mile and a half. Regardless of which sewer site winds up being selected, another problem with extending these lines is to do that across the river is not recommended. So that was the piece of land we were speaking of, and those are some of the problems with
it. Okay, so you are not speaking about any piece of land within the proposed urban reserve line.
Correct. We're speaking of a detached piece.
Got it.
That would replace a similar piece today.
Thank you.
Let's see, Mr. McMillan, as chair of the advisory council, said that this is an unfinished report, premature. This has been a concern raised often by the advisory council, and I'd like to actually thank the advisory council and commend them. They've done a tremendous effort over the years in dealing with this, and it's actually a very it's a pleasure to go out there once a month. It's a great community to work with. And so staff understands that frustration and at times is in full agreement with that. And we believe that your commission and the advisory council should have every opportunity to weigh on these matters. I've also appreciated the historic perspective that the advisory council provides to staff. It's a simple phone call to know that the last commercial building actually was a replacement of a fire in 1964. That's the type of community they are. Mr. McMillan disagreed with our take that it's inconsistent and it flies in the face of the strategic growth principles. I think initially, as we've stated, as Mr. Bunin stated, the commercial will follow the rooftops. Initially, that's a scenario that we would have to agree upon, that it is not a perfect match with the strategic growth principles, and that's where we get to the notion of we're looking long-term and providing that opportunity for a town like Shandon. Internally, the vision in the plan is that Shandon will be consistent with those strategic growth principles. The North County Habitat Conservation Plan, it would be beneficial if that were done before the Shandon plan is completed. We have an arrangement with the Fish and Wildlife Service to complete the Shandon Habitat Conservation Plan as the first building block of the North County Habitat Conservation Plan, and that has been funded by the primary applicants, and that's their undertaking. Now, having said that, we have written correspondence from at least one of the primary applicants that they're suspending the funding of the habitat conservation plans. So we're in, we'll be addressing this more as we learn more, but it could very well be the case that the region-wide HCP has to be adopted before this plan can move forward, or the Fish and Wildlife Service agrees to other mitigation strategy for Shandon short of the region-wide HCP being adopted. So I kind of opened that up as a, that's a big issue that's going to be coming to your commission today. I just don't have enough information to or time to go into it. So there is, as of today, we do have the backing of the Fish and Wildlife Service to do a Shandon HCP. That is the stepping stone for the region wide HCP. And I think staff agrees with the Mr. McMillan's take on the freedom of choice in terms of shopping and where one lives and works. We can provide the opportunity. We can set the plan out there, and then it everyone has the choice of where to shop. If you work in Paso, you can obviously choose to shop in Paso. Now, the Mr. Wynn with the Water Resources Advisory Council suggested that the water analysis is inadequate and to do an SEIR, that would be a supplemental environmental impact report. We wouldn't have to do that. We don't have a final yet. We would simply have to make determination if we had to do additional analysis and recirculate the existing environmental impact report, but your commission can direct staff to do additional water analysis if you choose to. The LOS determination made by the board, this was also raised by Ms. Luft and Mr. Larson. In terms of what the action the board took, our recommendation is that, in our opinion, is that this community plan is not a typical general plan amendment. This is a comprehensive plan that looks at a wide range of issues. Years have been invested in it. The board was aware of this plan being worked on when they made the determination. There was no determination by the board or direction by the board to not do this plan. And because of the overwhelming, the scope that this takes on, to compare it to a standard general plan amendment really is inappropriate. And so we think that this is something that if any one project were to go through this, even a percentage of what the community plan has to this date, would be worthy to step up and compare itself to the plan and to ask for some sort of to be treated as Shandon rather than to treat the Shandon community plan as something significantly smaller. The board made determination on how to treat individual discretionary land use permits. This isn't an individual discretionary land use permit. So your commission still needs to weigh the water issue and make determination on the findings in the environmental impact report. But our recommendation is to move forward and that this is consistent with the level of severity 3 determination by the board due primarily to the magnitude of the type of project. It's not a standard general plan amendment. There's been a couple of folks brought up that the offsets in terms of what the larger community, and we agree that this needs to be looked at in also the scope of the larger community, what the voluntary conservation techniques and methods that every individual, every landowner, every household can do in the North County. Well, Shandon will be, the plan has that for Shandon in advance before anyone else would be doing that. And so that's a key offset for Shandon. The argument that don't look at the offset of ag is a valid argument, and we've, as staff, we've gone back and forth with this for years as to how to respond to that. And the fact of the matter is, immediately when the ag's removed, there is definitely a savings. This was factored in by the water the analysis that was done for the Shandon EIR. Side note, the same consultant that is overseeing the has done a lot of the work on the greater Paso Robles groundwater basin is also the consultant that did the water analysis for the Shandon EIR. We will have opportunity for, that's Fugro, their representative, to be here at a future date, and that will be a critical discussion at that time. So we feel Shandon does have that offset. Also, at the same time, is where one of the key features, and this was brought up in Mr. Wilkins' initial discussion on to why do a community plan, why direct growth in this area, is that while where agriculture chooses to come or not come, and if we take out alfalfa here, it might show up elsewhere, can be the same said for houses. The population, as Mike also touched upon, in the North County is growing, and those will go somewhere. They can go into the cities. That would be preferred in terms of if you look at our strategic growth principles, but also they can grow in the rural areas where land, there's a lot of one-acre land parcels out there. That's not favorable when you look at the strategic growth principles. So Shandon is part of that solution in directing growth to where the strategic growth principles would rather see it, to not encourage random growth patterns in the rural area, and to have a sense of offset internally into the plan that says there will be conservation. When you, if you were to trade off, simply trade off a multifamily unit compared to someone building on an acre, you're looking at easily three times the water use on an acre lot than you would a multifamily house. It could be even higher. So in agreement with some of the statements, it's not perfect, but this plan in terms of providing that opportunity and directing growth in an urban area to where we have mitigation measures in place rather than seeing the growth develop randomly in the rural setting is preferred to be in the urban areas. We will be bringing, there was Ms. Luff brought up the consistency with some of the conservation element policies. We will be bringing in the future a whole general plan analysis, consistency analysis, and those will be covered.
Can I ask a question right now?
Yes.
You know, you're basically saying that we're going to get it in the future. When's the next hearing for this item scheduled for?
March 24th.
You're going to have any of this or all of it by the 24th?
Yes, general plan consistency analysis you'll have next week.
What will we not have?
I'm sorry?
What will we not have? I mean, are we going to have everything by the 24th or not?
You'll have a general plan consistency analysis and any follow-up to today's discussion that needs to be done.
Are there going to be other things that are going to come later?
Yes, there will be other things that will be coming later. For example, the actual exhibits that show the zoning changes that are being proposed and the standards for that go into the land use ordinance, which are actually summarized in Chapter 9 of your plan, but there will be an exhibit that has the exact ordinance language for that.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, I'm going to stop you right here because I really want to talk about the water. I don't, having gone through the Paso Robles groundwater basin study and the resource capacity study, I have to tell you that with having read your additional supplemental staff report, which I greatly appreciate you guys getting to me last night. I personally, and I think Mr. O'Grady agrees with me, I'll just jump into it. Having done the same thing is, you know, we are concerned about the water, and I just want to know what I would like to know is, I didn't really understand what you said when you said we don't have a final EIR. Isn't that what this is, a final EIR?
Pardon me, yes, the distinction. The board hasn't certified the final EIR.
Okay,
so,
you don't have a certified. Okay.
Mr. Wynn was suggesting we do a supplement. We wouldn't have to do that. We can do more study.
Okay.
It's just a different
part. That's the part I want to get clear about. I personally think that there's a possibility that we don't have enough information in the EIR dealing with water, that that the LOS 3 means what it says it means, which is we don't approve anything unless we know where the water's coming from, and we don't. And your staff report and the EIR say that. I mean, they say, you know, we have water now, but in 15 years or 10 years or 20 years, we're not going to have the water. And that, to me, that's saying we don't have the water. I mean, the fact that it's going to take a long time to get to the actual time we don't have the water is not really the germane point. The point is that when we talk about the plan and approving the plan right now says we don't have the water. So what would be needed to address that issue? What kind of time and what are we talking about if this commission were to think to agree with me?
Have Rincon.
The additional work in time, we would have to consult with Rincon, who prepared the EIR, and Fugro, who did the water analysis. One of the things, just to add to that, was brought up that I just need to make it clear that the EIR concludes that there is a Class 1 impact with water supply at the end of the day at build-out, not the initial phases at build-out. And so I'm not suggesting we shouldn't do more water analysis. However, if the likely conclusion is still the same, that there is an issue and it's still Class 1, and then we need to determine, if going through that exercise, what more fruit is going to be brought to the
right.
table.
Yeah, and I understand that you've certainly been working on this for many years, but I also know that things have changed to me, at least in my mind, only with a commissioner of just 2 years' experience. Things have changed in terms of water to me quite drastically, and maybe I'm wrong, and they haven't from the planning perspective, from a real planning perspective. Professional planning perspective, but I kind of am agreeing with some of the public comments, specifically Mr. Larson, you know, from the city of Paso Robles, who said, you know, the LOS 3 certification is a wake-up call. It is saying the problem is not in the future, the problem is now. And I kind of thought when we were recommending certification of an LOS 3 that's what we were saying, is there's a problem with water and we need to do something about it. I'm personally not swayed by the staff's response to that, which is, you know, it's only a little bit of water, and it's a long time, you know, it's spread out over a long time. That to me is not persuasive. So we might want to get into that. This is a commission at this point. I don't know how much more comment you want to make, but to me, if we don't deal with the water stuff and what we want to do about the water, then we might as well, the rest of it's kind of, you know, secondary in my mind.
Yeah, Madam Chair, may I just, Mike Wolken, may I just respond briefly on the water? We pointed out in our analysis that it's not, the argument isn't just that, well, it's just a small portion of the total water pumping. I think we were trying to emphasize that there are mitigation measures available that are consistent with the RCS, the Paso Robles RCS recommendations. The offset, for example, the fee program and so forth that I explained before. Also, the EIR does present alternatives, and the alternatives have different impacts on water, so that's another avenue for your commission to explore. And earlier, we put on the screen the difference in net pumping with different alternatives, and one of the alternatives actually, even before mitigation, reduces the net increase in pumping to roughly a balanced situation.
Right.
So that's another thing that your commission can do. That's presented in one of the EIR alternatives. That option is also available for your commission. So your commission may want to consider whether you have enough information to kind of proceed on a direction at this point. That would help staff as well. So we don't spend too much time going down the wrong path if your commission is really interested in going down another path or looking at another alternative maybe. We think there is good information on water, but certainly your commission's prerogative to ask for more. But as far as specific studies, we'd want a consultant with the EIR consultant who should be here at, I believe, at our next meeting, okay, along with the water experts, so we can get into more of the technical details on the water analysis. Okay. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say on the water. Oh, one thing maybe on the ag offsets. And those figures that we showed up on the screen earlier did include a water savings from conversion of agriculture. But I do want to make the point that the purpose of the ag conversion is not so we can balance our water. It's kind of a result of expanding the community in a logical manner. Any kind of expansion of this community is going to impact agriculture because it's surrounded by agriculture. There will be some conversion of agriculture, although it's been minimized from earlier versions of the plan quite a bit, and that will result, theoretically, in some water savings over the long run. So that has been factored in, and that's a point, definitely legitimate point for your commission to discuss whether we should factor that in or try to go beyond that in our mitigation to accommodate or account for that water that's being saved theoretically by conversion of agriculture. So that's definitely something to look at. But it is kind of a consequence of doing a community plan. You have some loss of agriculture. It's been minimized. There are buffers. There's other mitigation for the loss of agriculture. But there's some savings theoretically as well. As far as the rest of the water used from agriculture, the water balance analysis assumed that would remain constant into the future. And we've heard comments that you can't really predict what's going to happen with agriculture in the future. That's true. It could intensify. There could be irrigated ag could be taken out of production. We don't know. The analysis assumed it would stay constant, except, of course, the portion that's being converted to an urban use. That was counted. So I just wanted to make that clear about the use of ag offsets, definitely a legitimate issue for your commission to discuss.
Okay, good. I know that originally you two were not expecting to be doing this all day, that you actually had planned, that you knew that we thought we were going to be doing this more in the afternoon, and I understand that part of the reason that things are more scheduled for the 24th is because that's when you really thought that we were going to be a lot of time. I don't mean to make you feel like you're not prepared, because I know you are, for what you thought you were going to be doing today.
Okay. So I may offer one other idea, and that is your commission may want to keep this in the back of your minds, and that is you do have an option, for example, of requiring the review of this plan again, assuming it gets approved, requiring the review in a few years, for example, at which time the pumping update may have been done for the groundwater basin. We'll have a chance to look at what the conditions are and then require any adjustments if needed at that time to the plan, for example, reducing build-out or density or requiring additional water information or water measures to be taken. So because we have a long time period within which to deal with when there really won't be any significant impacts on ag, which if they occur might occur 20 years in the future. So that's another thing you might want to keep in mind. You have this ability to require a review of the plan after a period of years and make any adjustments.
That's helpful. I think one of the other issues is that, and I'm going to let the rest of the commission speak to here, is that none of us have done a community plan update on this commission. So what we have is options. What are the technical, supplementals versus additional studies versus this and that? We're just a little bit lost, and without knowing what you have planned for future staff reports and future kind of support, I'm just feeling a little little unsteady here. But let's go ahead and let somebody else say things. Mr. Go ahead first, in case. Yeah, okay.
First of all, let's see where to start. I want to say that I'm I I think this is a really a wonderful opportunity, this development of this community plan, and that I can appreciate a tremendous amount of work from the community and staff that's gone into this, and the fact that the world has changed quite a bit over the last 6 years or so. And I think it's really important we continue with it and that we continue on many aspects of it, although we may be developing a blueprint for a house that will never get built. But I think it's important that we have that plan, that the community of Shandon has that plan. Who knows what 20 years, 15 years from now will bring. And I would hate to see us not do anything and have the town perhaps just wither. I remember Shandon as a fairly interesting little place to go and play baseball when I was little. So anyway, that said, I do like your suggestion of pulling out at least the water component of this at this point and asking staff to, whether it's a supplemental EIR or whether it's just additional data for the current EIR, I think that's valuable, particularly as it pertains with the development of the basin management plan, which is voluntary, I understand, but is certainly in progress, and I believe City of Paso Robles is a lead agency or something of a lead agency on that. But I also want to make sure that we consider the alternative to the community and the impact on the groundwater if we don't do anything. We have a lot of there's a lot of already zoned appropriate land out there that I need to know more about how it could be developed if we don't have a if we don't move forward with this. So that's a couple of sort of more generalized big picture questions. I do have for Mr. Johnson a specific question with regard to that detached commercial services Peck Ranch property, whatever we want to refer to it. As in the intervening time between now and our next meeting, one of the things I've heard referred to is that there's an existing commercial services area that's about 6 acres bisected by a creek that has a limited area of development. And then I hear the reference that this other area that you're suggesting is 24 acres, but it really won't be 24 acres developed. It'll be something smaller because of various mitigations. And I'd like really much more specifics, greater amount of specifics on how much could be developed there. And as to the suggestion that it be pulled out and handled under the area plan, which Mr. Johnson seemed to concur with, and then having to pull in design standards, I'm wondering if in the community plan you couldn't isolate it within the community plan itself and just give it the ability, since it's not going to be tied to water, to the CS water and the district water or to a sewer plant, can you not just keep it within the community plan and give it its own priority so that it, if it was desired, it could develop on its own? And I'm saying that not necessarily supporting the development of that parcel. I'm just posing that as a question. I think that kind of my initial questions. Thank you.
You guys, do you want to answer that or do you want to think about it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Mike Wilkin, we can respond to at least one of the Commissioner Irving's questions, and that is about the leaving it in the plan versus pulling it out. I think we definitely can leave the Northwest Commercial Service site as a part of the plan, and I think it should be in the plan. What we could do is, and will be up to your commission, is to leave the property owner the option to develop that site separately from an overall master plan for the rest of the Peck property. And that seems to make sense to us. So that there would still be they could include it in a master plan for all of the rest of the Peck Ranch property, or it could be taken out, or maybe that's not the right word, developed, planned and developed separately before the rest of the property is master planned. So that's definitely a possibility, and we think that has some merit.
Madam Chair, if I might add to that, I think, too, a critical distinction here is that whatever standards and rules, programs and guidelines you choose for that property will go into effect. We can, it's just a matter of where do they reside. Do they reside in the community plan or in the rural area? But absolutely, the whatever limitations, thresholds you want to apply to that property can be done all at the same time. So we'll help you.
I think what I was getting at is it seemed like a duplication of effort to pull it out and then have to drag plans over and make changes to an area plan, whereas we're already talking about a community plan. That's that was a
efficiency. That's our name. That's good. Mr. Topping.
Yes. I know this is a work in progress. And
do you have your slide on?
I know this is a work in progress and that we're and it's been going for some time. What I see here is kind of the harnessing of the energy that came in with the Falling Star proposal some years back, and the county trying to say, okay, we've got these interests in examining specific projects comprehensively, and maybe it's time to take a look at the whole community. And that's good planning from the standpoint of doing reviews as you go on where are we now and where should we be going. It's part of the planning learning cycle. It's a feedback loop, and you say, okay, let's take a new look at where we thought we were going and try to fit that together. So I really applaud staff, particularly the public facilities part of this plan, for trying to think out the entire big picture and all the implications of the what are some fairly hefty proposals for a place that's very well defined and kind of small in size. And the numbers that we saw this morning do suggest that there's kind of a choice between going towards a quadrupling or quintupling of the population and paying the costs associated with that, and leaving it to chance. So if I were a community member, I would feel somewhat concerned about what are we getting ourselves into. I haven't heard that. In fact, I haven't heard a whole lot from the community this morning. I think we heard some previously, and I would really like to know how people in the community feel about what are the amenities that we're protecting with this plan, and what amenities are we sacrificing to future growth. So it's a beautiful little place. I was just there yesterday, and the setting is great, and that park is wonderful, and you get a real sense of community when you're there. So my suggestion, my thought is that I've got at least 20 questions, if not more, just from a preliminary review of the plan. But I think we should take our time getting those questions out and allowing enough time for staff to come back. I noticed that the attachments in the staff report, it says that exhibits A, C, D, E, and G will be coming at some future point. And this comes back to Chairperson Christensen's question of when do we receive those. And in looking at those exhibits, I see also what I'm looking for that I can't find in here, and that is comparisons of existing and proposed boundaries for various types of land use. Is that, am I misreading this? I've been looking for comparative maps that show here's what's allowed now, here's what the recommendation or, you know, the community plan recommends. And I'm looking for that both on the urban reserve line and also on the land use changes. And are they in the plan? Because I've been looking back and forth trying to find those. Or are those part of the future exhibits?
Madam Chair, Mike Wolken, yes, they're part of future exhibits that will show the change in the actual zoning on the official maps for different properties, and those exhibits will be forwarded to you. We were planning to cover that at a later meeting, but if your commission wants, we can include those in our next package to you in advance of the next hearing.
I think that would be great if we could see what actually is proposed.
What I'm thinking is we'll hear from the other two commissioners in a minute here, and then we'll have our lunch break. And then we'll kind of come back and kind of ask all our questions and see what we can expect for the next meeting as opposed to future meetings and see where, you know, what will really help us. Because when we have people who really want to get to a topic and the topic isn't going to be addressed by the staff, that creates this kind of, we're not listening to part of it because we want to get to our own thing. And it's just, that's what I meant by when I originally talked to you about getting everything all at once, is I just knew that this was going to come up. So, yes. Let's go hear from Mr. O'Grady, and then we'll hear from Mr. Murphy, and then we'll have lunch, and then we'll come back.
Madam Chair, if I might just respond to one of the points Mr. Topping raised, and that's the question is, what are we getting ourselves into it from the community's perspective? And having been at the community, I think two things you can look to is, well, first of all, is the answer is that question's been asked. It's been asked in many different ways, and so staff has gotten that. And that's one of the points why we've gone to the length of describing these growth scenarios and what the level of change would be. But two things you can look at would be in the appendix in the plan is the community priorities. So that'll give you a feel of what the concerns are in the community. I think it's appendix A. It's in the plan. And then secondly, you can look at a lot of the comments raised by community members and give you a flavor for that is a very, very important question out of the community, this potential change. What are we getting ourselves into?
Thank you. Mr. O'Grady.
On page 4-3 of the staff report, it says, the Board of Supervisors authorized an update, I stress update, of the Shandon Community Plan. The literal text of what the board meant by authorizing an update, can you speak to that? Does that include this commission just saying heck with it? We're not going to update it, or are we required by the board direction to update it, or what are our options here?
Mike Wilkin, the board did authorize the staff to prepare a comprehensive update to the community plan, which is before your commission now. And as with other, this is a legislative action, it's discretionary. As with other such actions, your commission has the option of making one of many recommendations to the board to approve the plan with conditions or changes, to look at an alternative and approve that, or to not recommend doing anything. That's an option as well. And your recommendations get forwarded to the Board of Supervisors. The board takes the final action, of course, but that is your commission's prerogative to recommend from a variety of scenarios, including no project.
Okay, so there was no additional language provided by the supervisors to give us any more guidance as to what they had in mind, other than update the Shandon Community Plan.
Well, there is a guidance document was approved that has an outline of all the things that need to be included, and the board approved a work program and a contract for the EIR, and all of that does really involve a comprehensive update. That's what the board asked us to do, and that's what we've done. We followed that direction, but it's going to be up to the decision makers, you and the Board of Supervisors, to determine how that comes out.
Okay, on page 4-1 of the staff report, the recommendation is twofold. One, adopt the Shandon Community Plan, and then two, certify the final EIR. Can we do one and not two? Can we do two and not one? Or is this a package deal?
I think I'll let counsel answer the question.
Jim Orton from County Counsel's Office. You're required to act on the environmental document when you act on the update unless you decide to disapprove the project. But I would say it's a package deal. You've got to act on both items. The EIR is either adequate and can be certified as a final EIR, or if more information needs to be prepared in order to make it an adequate EIR, it may need to be revised. But there was some discussion earlier about whether there should be a supplement prepared. From a legal standpoint, a supplement is prepared after you have a certified EIR, as staff has already pointed out. So, acting on the environmental document is one of the things you would be required to do as part of the update.
Okay, let me ask my question a little bit differently, perhaps. Instead of just acting on it, what if, there's class one impacts in the EIR. To sort of certify it, there would need to be overriding considerations. Is that correct?
To certify the EIR as being adequate, that's one thing. And then when you act on the project, that's when you would have to have your findings.
And so what I hear you say is that in order for this commission to adopt an update to the community plan, then we would have to certify the EIR and then provide the overriding considerations addressing all the Class 1 impacts. Is that correct?
I believe so, unless you were going to deny the project and just leave everything as it is.
Okay.
Because any time you act on a general plan change, you're required to have an environmental document along with it, and it's either a negative deck or an EIR.
Okay. The reason I'm persisting in this is because I agree with my colleagues on the commission that I think a community plan and an update, the current update, is desirable. But I'm thinking of my service on a city planning commission where a general plan update was adopted, but the EIR did not offer the necessary background to support the adoption of the general plan update, and that seemed to pass muster. And that's why I wanted to be very sure here of what our options are as far as whether we can do a community plan, but then not certify the EIR because there are perhaps deficiencies in it, and we don't want to do overriding considerations, but we still want a plan.
No, I don't think you can legally do that. And I think your project description has to cover everything. If there's something that you wanted to adopt that wasn't addressed in the EIR, the proper procedure would be to send it back, have it revised, and study everything, and then come back.
Okay, sounds like a package deal to me then.
Okay. I believe package deal is it. Mr. Murphy, we only have a few minutes. Okay, great.
Real quick on CEQA, aren't the CEQA overriding statement of conditions, isn't that in the CEQA findings, not in the project findings? They've only done one, but isn't that, you've mentioned a findings.
Well, when you act on the project, you have to make findings.
Right.
And there's the findings of the the state guidelines in CEQA says that if you're going to approve a project that has impacts that can't be mitigated, you have to make findings with regard to them. Either they are mitigated, or if they can't be mitigated, if they're Class 1 impacts, then you have to make overriding findings. But that's when you act on the project itself as part of that process.
Yeah, I guess my question isn't the actual statement of overriding conditions in the CEQA findings, not in the project findings, or maybe I'm making too fine a distinction there.
Well, if you look back at the SunPower project that we had recently,
that's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
There were two sets of findings, but they're all part of the project approval process. Okay. And CEQA requires that when you act on a project to approve it, that you make findings. And whether they're all put together in one document or they're two separate exhibits, they need to be done at the same time as part of the project approval.
Okay. Then my other question on, is a community plan, could it only address what happens inside the urban reserve line? This is going back to this 24-acre parcel, or can it address land use outside of the URL?
Jay, let me jump in real quick. Cammie Griffin, County Planning, because I haven't spoken in a real long time. The community plan itself will address what's in the urban reserve line. However, as part of your action as a commission, you can approve changes to the rural area of the Shannon Carrizo area plan that could address areas outside of the urban reserve line, including this property that's been talked about on and off today.
Okay. But the plan itself only applies to what's inside the urban reserve line?
Typically, a community plan is for a community. Yes.
Then the other comment I want to make, I do want to address ag, land, water offsets down the road. That's a topic I think I want to get into, if I don't let everybody else.
Yep, we all want
that's
to.
That's it.
We love it. Okay, so it's 12:09. We're going to go ahead and break for lunch until 1:30. When we come back, we're going to ask tons of questions, and then we're not really going to expect staff to be able to answer all of them because, again, we've ended up with a much longer hearing time today than we expected. But that will give staff a great idea of where to go next, I'm sure. So that will be helpful to everyone. Thank you.
You might want to rephrase.
Are you ready, Mr. Wilkin? Mr. Don? Things? Good. Okay, so it's 1:32, and I'm calling this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission back to order on Thursday, March 10th. Mr. Wilkin, you said you had some comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Wilkin, planning staff. Before we broke for lunch, I think your commission was discussing a few issues such as, well, what's going to happen next and what more pieces are going to be coming from staff, and so I wanted to fill you in on that and maybe propose an order of topics to discuss that your commission might want to discuss from here on out. So What are the remaining pieces that you'll be getting? We are going to be providing you with a complete analysis of general plan consistency. So we'll be looking at all the applicable general plan policies and analyzing the community plan's consistency with those policies. There will be a section on community priorities. There will be a section on organization of the plan and staff recommended changes to the plan. Staff will be proposing a number of changes based on comments we've heard and things we saw in the plan that need to be revised or fixed. And then there will be EIR findings and other exhibits of related amendments that need to be made. For example, the official standards that go in the land use ordinance, which are the official version of what's in Chapter 9 of the plan, the standards, and a map exhibit showing the precise zoning changes that will occur, the boundaries of the zones, what's changing from existing zoning to to propose zoning. The CEQA findings I already mentioned. And then there will also be an exhibit of changes to the Chandon-Carrizo area plan that go along with the community plan. The way it's arranged now in the land use element, the Chandon urban area standards, which apply just to Chandon, are a part of the contained in the Chandon-Carrizo area plan. Those are those text guidelines, standards, programs are all coming out and being put in the Chandon Community Plan document, this document which you have. The remaining portions for the area outside of Chandon are what remain in the Chandon-Carrizo area plan, and there would also be some standards for the rural areas, for example, the commercial service piece, the northwest commercial service piece that we've been talking about this morning. So anyway, that's kind of a housekeeping kind of item, but that's an exhibit that you will need to adopt, changes to the area plan. What can we give you before your next hearing was another question. So we will provide the consistency analysis with general plan policies. We can give you more details on the Northwest Commercial Service piece. There were some questions about that this morning. And if your commission wishes, we can give you the maps showing the precise zoning change proposals. And we can try to answer as many of today's questions as possible, but we haven't heard those yet, so we can't promise that we're going to answer all your questions in the next few days. So that's what staff would propose to send you next week in advance of your March 24th hearing.
When you say you propose to send this next week, you're talking about you're proposing to send us just those two pieces, the general plan consistency analysis and the map exhibit.
Right, with some
and answers to
questions.
Today, which could be extensive, obviously.
As many as we can get to.
Okay.
And we would do that by the middle of next week
and
send that to your commission and post it on our website. And then finally, the order of discussion from here on out, staff would suggest, and of course this is up to your commission. Your commission may want to, before today's meeting is over, kind of decide on a strategy or an approach, but staff would suggest that at the next hearing we kind of pick up where we left off and talk about the general plan consistency, and we can focus again on agriculture and water. We will have experts on water next meeting. We can have a discussion on community priorities, if your commission wishes. And then if your commission is comfortable with kind of a direction to head, your commission might want to start reviewing the actual chapters of the plan, chapter by chapter. Following that, and our next meeting after March 24th is in May, we might want to get into the environmental impact report. And we can have available at that meeting our EIR consultant and discuss the EIR and the findings, the EIR findings.
Mr. Greening, we'll have much opportunity to speak. Do you really need to speak?
3 minutes.
All right. Can I do this?
It's up to the discretion of the committee.
All right, come on up. We're opening up to short public comment. If anybody
appreciate
else has
the opportunity.
If anybody else is a speaker who hasn't spoken yet, now's the time.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I will say, just for general information, when I have a bad day with my seizure disorder, these lights make me ill, and I try to minimize my time in this room. So that just for the record.
Okay.
I can't just hang around here all day being toyed with whether I get to talk or not. I am suffering. Very often I am suffering being in this room, and I just want everybody to know that. Now, my prepared remarks expressed a concern relative to Ag Policy 24 because I did not see a detailed site-specific evaluation. Apparently, that's a piece that is coming. And I would hope that it actually points to the findings that can't be made if they can't be made, because we are setting a precedent that others will use. I'm skeptical that we can find that the land does not meet the criteria for inclusion in the agriculture designation. I am skeptical that we can make the finding that agriculture is, production is not feasible due to some physical constraint. But anyway, I'll leave that until we see the evaluation. Water. We are setting precedent for how we treat a level of severity 3 certified basin. It's true that a lot of work was done on this before the certification happened, but now that it has happened, we can't ignore it. Obviously, the state water subscription is about a third of the amount that supposedly the demand would go up with the staff-recommended project, and the subscription does not equal delivery because the project is not uniformly reliable. So, again, you need to be aware that you are setting a precedent when it comes to water use. In the entire Paso Robles Basin, the rural area plan will come later. When we're talking about infrastructure, infrastructure is not just capital. It's also ongoing operations of. And, of course, my special concern is transit, because I don't know where in the RTA budget the operating funds to extend service to meet the needs of the Shandon population will come from, where the extra buses, where the drivers will come from without hurting existing service. And yet it is a critical need. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to make Highway 46 bigger. Why not spend some to make its use more efficient? 40 people in one bus plus safe stopping distance occupy 250 lane feet. The same 40 people in individual cars occupy well over a lane mile. We can't afford to keep building bigger and bigger highways. We need to use what we have more efficiently. And I have seen nothing so far in the plan as to how transit operations needed by whatever population come to will be sustained. Anyway, thank you for these 3 minutes.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, I'm bringing it back to the commission, and looks like Mr. Irving, it's your area, kind of, so go ahead and shoot the questions out.
Well, I'm glad to have the order of discussion. I put the cart before the horse, I guess, because my questions are all about the EIR.
I was going to say we may end up changing that. I thought we could kind of get our questions out. We should get all of our questions out now, and then we can talk about how we actually want to do it, kind of once we understand what our main issues are. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I've got pages in the EIR, and I don't know that you want to. I was kind of anticipating we would go through this as we did with SunPower, sort of section by section within the EIR. So, I mean,
well, what do you
get into the mitigation measures under the ag element and all of that? Sam?
Well, what do you think then? Are you saying that what does the commission think? Maybe we should talk about what order we want to do it in. Do we want to talk about the EIR before we talk about
without the preparer here, would imagine it's probably difficult.
We aren't going to talk about it today. We're just going to ask questions, but we can ask questions today. But the question is, do we want to go over the EIR before we go over the actual plan? And I kind of was with you. I thought we were going to go over the EIR before the plan, but maybe there's some constraints with our consultants or something?
It's up to your commission's discretion.
Okay.
We can have our consultant available if your commission wants to discuss that at the next hearing rather than in May. Although we probably won't have the findings, the EIR findings ready for your next hearing. That's why we thought we would send you the EIR findings and you'd have a chance to look over those before discussing the
development program and versus the 5,000 person recommended development program. So I would appreciate the opportunity, number one, to ask questions this afternoon on the plan, but then also to have it further explained first before we get into the EIR. Maybe we could take half the day on the 24th with a stepwise explanation of the plan, and then the in the afternoon address our questions on the EIR.
On the 24th, we have Twisselman first. We may not even get to this agenda. Is that correct?
Okay.
Do we have Twisselman first? Yeah.
Yeah.
So who knows if we'll even get to Shandon on the 24th.
Okay. So so the point is, it's going to take more time, and I would personally appreciate the opportunity to have the whole plan before us, and a whole explanation on the whole plan, as for starters.
You know, I'll put my two cents in. I agree with Commissioner Topping. to me, what is driving this is a community plan which considers what the residents want, and as mitigated by staff input and commissioner discussion. So I think once we get our arms around what we all think is a community plan, then we can bounce that off the EIR, see where it rings up tilt, and if we have to go back maybe in terms of what the EIR may say as far as restrictions on what the community plan can or can't do, we may have to modify the community plan somewhat, or we just do overriding consideration. So I guess I feel like the community plan is the engine and the EIR is the caboose on this thing. And so that's the order of battle as I see it anyway.
Okay. Mr. Irving or Mr. Murphy, you have a preference or weigh in here?
I'll just say that I'll defer my questions about the community plan until the next meeting. I do have one question for staff on the question of zoning that Mr. Johnson brought up this morning. There was a discussion about the mixed-use zoning in the residential area north of the park, I think, if I heard you correctly. And that your speculation was that it was to allow somebody to have mixed use, but that it could easily just stay single-family residence. And so one thought I wanted to throw out is as you think of zoning areas that may or may not become a commercial use, if you have a commercial-type zoning on it, it can impede the development of residential development because lenders don't particularly care to construct residential loans on land that's not zoned residential, you know, following my drift. And that was just one comment from your presentation this morning, and I will, what's the appropriate term, reserve my time for another meeting.
Mr. Murphy? You don't have to say anything.
I don't know.
Okay. You know, I'm fine with doing with the suggested order that staff has, you know, made, that the talking about general plan consistency. That right there may take us the time we're going to have next meeting. And we can talk about community priorities if there's more need for discussion after we've had a chance to read the parts of the reports that are in the material. And then we can go through the plan chapter by chapter as desired, and then we can go to the EIR in May.
That works.
Yeah, see if that works. So that's fine with me. But so do we have questions now that we want to make sure staff is ready to answer about the plan for the next meeting? Mr. Topping.
Well, at the risk of being repetitive, I just want to say that it would be very helpful to see those maps that you're talking about that shows the actual changes, both in the zoning and in the URL. So that's one request. And then maybe at the next meeting we could have a discussion about why the URL is being expanded as it is. In other words, what is the purpose of the expansion of the URL? I'm not clear on that. I don't clearly understand the extent to which it's being expanded. That's one of the events that may have intervened to to raise questions or to cause us to raise questions now in that maybe 5 years ago there wouldn't be the same amount of question about how this fits with trying to reduce trips and carbon emissions and the other AB 32 related issues. It all sprang from that initiative on the part of the state, the former governor and the legislature. So it would be helpful to understand staff's perspective on this in connection with the changes that are being proposed on those maps. In other words, you've got areas that have been identified for new development of certain types, and then how does this fit within your perspective on the big picture on Senate Bill 375 sustainable growth goals? Moving on. Okay. This is in no particular order now.
It's all right.
All right. How will this plan impact existing amenities? In other words, how is what you see now visually and otherwise within the community affected in general terms? Where are the benefits to be gained? Where are the potential drawbacks of the plan? For example, the plan means more traffic on local streets. Okay, so I would see that as a drawback if I were living in that area. But there may be some benefits, and so what are those benefits that might balance the drawbacks? And this is very broad. How do we deal with the increased service demand financially in terms of which kinds, and I know this is answered incrementally in the public services and the water and wastewater chapters, but my question is, will there be benefits that the community obtains from infrastructure development that would help offset deficiencies that exist? I driving on 3rd and 4th Street yesterday, I noticed that it's dirt roads. And my question is, and that's the existing subdivision, and I'm sure that's a old subdivision, but is there any benefit to the community from the growth that would, the outcome of which would be perhaps the paving of those streets? They're terrible. You drive down those streets and there's these huge potholes. They're practically undrivable unless you drive a very circuitous course around these big crater-like potholes. So and yet there are nice homes there and people maintain their properties, but the question is, can the community benefit from the growth? Not just how much will the community have to pay. Here's another question. What will happen to the zoning in areas that are presently standard flood hazard areas under the FEMA mapping? I noticed that some of that is RSF zoning presently, and yet it's got the 100-year floodplain overlay zoning from the National Flood Insurance Program maps, and the question is, are those still lots that will just exist in kind of a no man's land from a development standpoint, or will we actually rezone those to something that would make clear what is buildable or not buildable depending upon what's which side of the boundary you're on? It would be helpful to know. Where will residents work as you begin to create a critical mass of housing? What proactive programs will there be to help bring jobs into the community? Is there something that would attract people to the community in the way of commercial development that would be that would boost business and create not just local services, but something that might be visitor serving? I don't know. It's an economic development question, and I'm sure this may have been hashed and rehashed at community meetings, but I think I'd be interested to know what do we see as an optimum promotional opportunity to create those jobs in order to balance jobs and housing. Oh, and the other thing is, I'm not sure whether we have the maps. I think we have the maps of the ag contracts in the EIR, right? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. That answers that. All right, I think that's my starter list. I may have more in the next time.
We'll let Mr. O'Grady go ahead, and if you have more, you're more than welcome to ask.
Okay, on page 4-8 of the staff report, and also on page 4-9, I'll go to 4-9. Two features of the community plan are located outside of the proposed URL, the two potential water treatment plant sites and a detached commercial service site. Well, we've talked about the service site, but why wouldn't the water treatment plant that's supposed to be designed to serve the urban area be located within the urban area? So that's a question. On page 4-10, it says residential development would occur in three primary land use types, which are not necessarily the same as the land use categories or zones shown on the official maps. And then an MU identification is not a land use category or zone that is shown on the official maps. And I guess my question is, why not? On page 4-11, this is where it talks about certain areas near the existing commercial core intended to enable property owners to add commercial uses to existing neighborhoods developed at single family densities. Well, if you're talking here about, and I think on another page it says if a particular landowner wants to convert his residential property into a commercial one, no problem. And I guess I could go along with that, provided there's a hearing and a CUP is required, because I can't think of anything. It could be potentially more disruptive to a residential neighborhood to have just somebody say, okay, I'm going to convert my property to commercial use, and not be a hearing with the neighbors. And then also on page 4-11, it says, when compared to the allowable multifamily densities in the land use ordinance, which range from 15 to 38 units an acre. Okay, the LUO says 15 to 38 density. The proposed overall RMF density in this plan of 13.8 units per acre is low by comparison. Well, why isn't it 15 out of respect for the ordinance instead of 13.8? Let's see. And then also on 4-11, it says 29% of the new residential units would be multifamily. And then it says in another paragraph on the same page, there's a total residential, it's talking about MFR with a density of 9 units per acre and a total residential build-out of 36 units. I just wondered if that was included in the 29% or not. On page 4-12.
Yeah, that's great. It's like boom, boom, boom. Especially the questions about density in terms of residential density and the land use ordinances and the zoning ordinances. And I understand the staff report said that the community had concerns. So if we're going to reduce it, then I'd like to hear more about those community concerns as opposed to just they didn't like it. I mean, why didn't they like it, and what's the concern? Okay, I would like some more information about the wastewater treatment plant sites and whether or not we are talking about tertiary treatment or not. And it kind of mentioned it very briefly, but didn't really, it said it was being considered, but didn't say anything else. And there was something about being able to save water because we're removing alfalfa fields, and so is that true for both sites, the PEC site and the San Juan site? I would like it to get clarified whether or not we're talking about needing a school site or not. Maybe have more conversations with the school board. I would like to I don't really understand the concerns that were raised about the habitat protection in the North County Habitat Conservation Plan. So I think Mr. Johnson alluded to the fact that you'll have more information later. So let's get that. That may apply to the EIR. Again, I'm not my recollection about that. Here, I know we've heard about it, but I don't remember exactly what that is going to do and what the timeline is on that, and how it would affect Shandon. Okay, so the last questions really go back to our earlier discussion this morning, and I really am not getting the staff's explanations for the policy consistency with the Paso Robles Groundwater Resource Capacity Study, LOS-3 certified, and ag land conversions. I'm not getting it. The way I'm understanding it, and that's why I'm going to tell you how I'm understanding it so you guys can explain it back to me again. My understanding about the LOS-3 was that we're supposed to find, if we're going to approve projects, including general plan amendments, that we're going to have new non-ag water. That's what we're going to do, is find where the new non-ag water is, and then you can have a project. So you need to get it from state water. You need to get it from some other pipeline. It needs to come from some source that's not ag and is new. And if that's not correct, then let's talk about that. But I'm just not convinced here. Okay, it's two of us that have the same question. That's the two of us who were working on this stuff. We thought we knew what we were doing, but maybe we didn't. So that's part of it. And then Mr. Wynn made a comment about the wastewater treatment plan. He said, commit to build it and don't just design it. So I think he was saying we really need to know what's going on with the wastewater treatment plant, and whether it's going to be built or not. And I guess, so we need to. I don't know if that's a question, but I'd like to have somebody address that comment. Yeah, just I'm going to be really looking at the policy consistencies and inconsistencies. I understand that we're talking about weighing things, that we need housing, we need places to grow. I'm totally in agreement with that that statement. And I do believe that Shannon is a place where there is room for some growth. I mean, we're talking about a very small town that will remain a very small town. But I'm just, some of the policy consistency discussions I've already read are troubling me, and specifically the ag land and water, as I've said. But I guess I go back to, again, Mr. Larson from Paso Robles' statement that, you know, the cities and other areas in Paso Robles are being asked to work cooperatively and work very hard on reducing their water usage. And I think what they don't want to see is see those savings just go to someplace else in their basin. That was the whole point of talking about an LOS-3, is that you don't save it over in Paso so you can give it to Shandon. And again, I understand there's long range. We're talking about long range. Nothing will happen maybe for 10 years in Shandon. But the report does say, or maybe the EIR says, but I thought it was their staff report and the plans talk about the fact that there will be a water problem sooner or later. So again, I just need that addressed. I'm going on and on about it, but that's because I'm really concerned. That's it for now. On the plan. Okay, Mr. Irving.
But I'll jump in on that to secondary. If they're not both being considered the same, why not? And I think that will have bearing on where we place the sites. So that was just something that came up with Commissioner Christensen's question. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other questions? Mr. Rishi?
Yeah, this is the supplemental staff report that you gave us, this letter addressing the water issue again. The capacity study requirement in this first paragraph in italics here talks about offsetting 100% of new water with non-agricultural water. This is on page 3, I guess. Yeah, page 3, the first bullet point in the middle of the page. Then on the next page 4, at the end of bullet point 2, is talking about meeting those requirements. And the last sentence says the conversion of irrigated agricultural land to urban uses, which seems like flies in the face of the previous bullet point. But then I look at one of these other bullet points, and you're talking about the ag land conversion being consistent with the ag land policy in that you needed to expand the urban reserve line. So if I understand your argument, you're right. You're saying, first, we're converting ag land to non-ag land and putting it in the URL. And consequently, that's creating water from this land, which is now no longer ag land. It's now some other type of land, and we're using that water to supply the water that is this non-ag source of water. It seems to me that we have understanding what the logic of those paragraphs are. I don't know if that's proper, but I think that's what I'm understanding. It's trying to say, yeah, as a consequences of our plan here, we're increasing your URL. We're taking land out of ag and convert it, let's say, to whatever it is, commercial, residential, and it's creating non-ag land. And as a all of a sudden, that water becomes non-ag water as opposed to ag water. So that's kind of one of the... Well, and then the other half of that argument, which is the point I brought up, you know, I don't know if we want to talk about it now, is the whole issue of, do we take land out of ag? And they brought up alfalfa as a good example. It uses large quantities of water for the purpose of creating water available for development. And that, to me, is that's a countywide issue that's come up before in South County. It's always been an issue with Napomo. You know, Mike knows that. It's debated back and forth. And I know what their position is on it, but that's something I think we got to look at, because this water issue is going to keep coming up. And are we willing to take 100 acres of alfalfa to generate 400 acres feet of groundwater to be able to expand development in our urban areas? And that's kind of the overriding issue that I think we got to eventually address, because these things are going to keep coming to us or keep having the same issue.
Well, I think then we talk about general plan consistency. Those are the kinds of policies we're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. I think we all completely agree with that.
Yeah, that's the ag land conversion and then use of that water, right, and then just the water issue on a standalone basis.
Right.
Those are kind of concerns, if not questions. But the language here, that's the interpretation I get of this letter, of how we're trying to justify meeting the capacity study requirements. That's all I've got.
Okay. Anything else for anybody else? I think we're kind of...
Madam Chair, we can try to answer some of these. In fact, I have a point of clarification on the whole alfalfa removal aspect. I think there may be some confusion because I know it's happened to me in the past. The alfalfa removal and why the water consultant looked at it that way was that we didn't go seek alfalfa and let's remove that so we could build houses. It was alfalfa that was coming out of production for two reasons. Both sewer plant locations would be located on property that's either in alfalfa or has been or similar crops. And then the habitat buffer along the east side and any future habitat buffers along the rivers and creeks for the Kit Fox habitat will require that land to come out of alfalfa production. And that's the only reason why it's in the formula at all. And so we don't want people to think that we're just going after, let's go remove some alfalfa so we can grow houses.
I don't think we thought that, but thank you.
Anyway, that's important. That
I may have come across that
alfalfa is coming out of production because the sewer plant's going to occupy 31 acres of alfalfa.
I understood that. And what I was asking was whether it was whether that was true for both sites.
It's true for both sites. I don't know if the cropping pattern today is identical, but it historically has been, which also leads me to Mike Wynn's question on don't just design the sewer, build it. The sewer will have to be built, as we talked about earlier. None of the development in the plan will occur without a sewer plant. And that leads me to a third question I can answer, is that neither...
Type of design.
That's correct. When the draft EIR was prepared, the plant design was for tertiary treatment was going to be the preferred option, because that design was going to rely heavily on reapplying that water for surface irrigation. It's a significant difference if you treat it to tertiary levels for crops. However, as the EIR was being completed, it was determined that based on the requirements of the state, that the nutrient removal and our desire for replenishing the groundwater outweighed that, and it was actually a preferred choice to go with this method here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all I can answer at this time. Maybe Mike had some other thoughts. I don't know.
Mike Wilkin, I think we can offer some of the answers. It might be better, though, to respond comprehensively when we get with all the answers.
We may be able to
provide little pieces here and there, but I think it would be best if we thought about it more and then gave you all the answers in one package.
We all think so, too, I'm sure. Yeah. Mr. Topping?
Yeah, I have a couple more less sweeping questions. I wanted to understand what the meaning of the study area boundary is. Does that have any official effect, or is it just simply an area that you started with that you've more or less looked at relationships within, but it doesn't have any formal... What gets adopted? Let me put it that way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Commissioner Topping, it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't, the study area boundary does not have any formal effect. It's not like an urban reserve line. It was an area that the Board of Supervisors asked us to look at and study as part of the update process. And so it does not have any other legal effect. It's been used for convenience in referring to the area that's discussed in the community plan. Everything in the community plan is contained within that study area, but other than that, it really doesn't have any effect. It's the legal effect. It's the urban reserve line that's of most significance, I would say, as a boundary.
Okay. A couple more. The outcome from the January 19th public meeting, I noticed there was one noted in the staff report, but I'm not sure what... Were the comments from that meeting all reflected in that long list of comments that we got at the beginning of the staff report? How do we? I guess we're interested in what's coming back.
Okay, at the January 19th meeting that we had out in Shandon was kind of an informational meeting where staff presented the public hearing draft and aspects of the plan, kind of the history. We wanted to familiarize the general population, the general public, with what was in the plan since we hadn't been out there with general community meetings for a while. I think 2007 was when we had the previous meetings out in the community. So we wanted to make as many people aware of the plan and the process and so forth. And staff took questions at the public meeting. I don't know that there were any formal questions submitted as a result in writing that we responded to, but we did respond at the meeting to people's questions. Do you have anything else?
No, that's correct. Excuse me. No, that's correct. And then, so the comments that you see in the appendix of the staff report were all received from the time the public review draft was released last year. So mostly from March through June of last year.
Okay, and then forgive me if this sounds like a dumb question, but is there a community services district there now? Yeah, it exists, and is that
another possibility? So those are all options for the community to explore.
It just seems to me that if this may be a question that deserves some further examination, simply because community services districts are kind of they actually represent the community because they're locally governed, and so you have elections and you have actually a local tax base that goes with them, and community service areas by contrast are usually a tax funding area for a particular service, and community services district can be multi-service, and it's kind of a step in the direction of having a city, but
it's
self-determination, put it that way.
Yeah.
And so it seems as though there some examination of that. And a CFD is different. A community facilities district is purely for the project. It's a project funding process whereby the future homeowners are taxed for the public facilities and services needs that they're creating. Then I wanted to go back to Commissioner O'Grady's question about mixed use. Is this a new designation in a community plan? I don't recall having seen it before.
The mixed use designation is it's one of those things that is not an official zoning designation. We put it in the plan simply to identify those areas where the mixed use pattern of development is being encouraged. So I guess it's new maybe in a community plan, but it's not a new zoning designation. Those areas that are identified as mixed use in this plan will actually have an official zoning of commercial retail, which does, you know, under our current system, allow a combination of residential and commercial uses. And that zoning would be accompanied by special planning area standards that tailor development standards to particular neighborhoods in the community. For example, the area around the downtown where the community plan recommends that commercial uses may be added to existing residential neighborhoods, as some of the commissioners pointed out, that would have special standards associated with that area. And then other areas would be more traditional mixed use, where, and they're probably vacant areas now, where you could have either all commercial retail or a combination of commercial retail and, for example, residential on top of the use. So all those areas would have an official zoning designation of commercial retail, and you'll see that in the maps that we'll forward to your commission. But they're identified in the community plan just as mixed use, so that just to draw attention that this is an area where these uses are encouraged, this mixture of residential and commercial.
So the pink areas around the park would be, how would they be rezoned? They're basically residential right now, right?
Oh, around the park? I'll let Jay talk about that.
If we could put the land use plan that's on the computer up. I think there may be a bit of confusion. Let me point out the cursor is on the existing community park. So everything north of the park, there's four pink blocks north of the park. Those are on vacant land. That's the Peck Ranch. There's absolutely nothing built there. The area that Mike just spoke about is the over here in the Old Town between 1st and 4th Street. This is the existing neighborhood that's built with single-family dwellings. And this is the part of town where the mixed-use designation on this map would allow that individual that has a house today sometime in the future come in with a commercial use, and it's been suggested that be accompanied, be approved through some level of conditional use permit. And so those would transition to commercial very slowly over time and at their will. We didn't want, it wasn't a popular notion to take that existing community and force their hand, if you will, to switch to commercial.
So what would go in the pink areas north of the park?
The pink area north of the park will be initially, when you see the zoning maps next time, that will be, because it's an ag preserve.
Areas of which mixed use would be a portion of that of that formula, which I think would come into alignment with an earlier question you had about alignment with SB 375 and sustainable community strategies. So that's a tool that we're going to continue to explore as we move forward with various policy and ordinance proposals.
Thank you.
Mike Wilkin, I just wanted to just point out that the existing land use ordinance does allow for a measure of mixed use development under our current system. So generally, it's you can have a residential use above or behind and attached to the primary non-residential use on the site, the commercial or office use on the site. And generally speaking, that residential use is, can't be any greater than or more intensive than the commercial use. So normally that would be about a 50-50 split in floor area, for example, generally speaking. But we do allow that currently, so under the commercial retail land use category, and it can be allowed under office and professional as well. We don't have any of that. We're not proposing any office zoning in this plan, but it is allowable under the current system in commercial retail, and we can deal with the specifics for different neighborhoods with special standards.
Thanks.
Good. Anything else, Mr. Toppy?
That's it. Thank you.
I do have a question from Mr. O'Grady, and then I see your light too, Mr. Irving.
Did you want to?
I want to jump back in on that.
If it's okay.
Sure.
So to just jump back in on that whole topic of the future four blocks north or the existing to the east of the park, if you zone the, I'd like you to come back with some discussion on the issue of financing such housing. If it's zoned commercial retail, it would seem to me a way that another approach might be to zone it residential and then allow for a commercial retail overlay on top of it so that the base zoning is for housing, with the assumption that that's, from what I've heard elsewhere, is that housing has to precede the commercial development. And I'm afraid that you might be restricting that housing from occurring by zoning it inappropriately to the point where a lender won't finance. So that's, I just want to make, I think we should have some more discussion on that. Thank you for letting me go.
Sure.
Commissioner.
Okay.
Just prepare for our next hearing on the 24th, since we're going to be speaking about water and agriculture. I know I would like participation from a representative from the Agriculture Department when we start talking about...
She's been here all along.
Yes, I see. Okay, but participation being the key. And then on the... with respect to water, when Chairperson Christensen and I were involved in all those hearings on the resource capacity study, it was James Caruso with county staff who was your key person there, and... I think it would be very valuable not only for Chairperson Christensen and myself, but also for the newer commissioners who did not participate in those studies to listen to his take firsthand on how the resource capacity study for the Paso groundwater basin relates to this Shandon community plan. So if you could have Mr. Caruso here, it would be very much appreciated.
Okay, I don't see any more lights. I think that we're done. I think we appreciate that, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Wolfman. I know you had a kind of a longer day than you expected, and but we'll hopefully shorten it up right now. I do appreciate the public who came down and gave us some comments and have been very patient with your presence. So we do need a motion to take testimony and
receive into
the record any testimony and documents.
So moved.
We have
second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then we are going to continue this. We need a motion to continue this item to May 24th.
March 24th.
March 24th. Sorry. Wishful thinking.
So
March 24th.
So moved.
Motion made. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. O'Grady. All in favor?
Aye.
And then I need a motion to adjourn to our next meeting, which is on March 24th.
Can we recap that next meeting's plan?
Oh, okay. Before we have the motion to adjourn, the next meeting we are planning on... We are going to get documents on general plan consistency.
Right.
Thank you very much.
You're off and running.